Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. The NCAA finally dropped the hammer on Michigan State. On Wednesday, the Spartans agreed to be put on probation for the next 3 years and vacate all 14 wins from the last three for alleged recruiting violations that occurred under former head coach Mel Tucker. Tucker was fired in 2023 for sexual harassment allegations. The NCAA says between 2021 and 22, Michigan State paid for and arranged travel for recruits and their families. This season, the Spartans are 3-6 in year two under Jonathan Smith. MSU is one of three teams in the Big Ten without a conference win. As for number one Ohio State, the Buckeyes host UCLA Saturday night at 7:30. Hear from OSU's head coach today at noon on the Ryan Day radio show. And the Blue Jackets are back on home ice tonight hosting the Edmonton Oilers at 7:30. Dean Evason told T-Bone and Tyvis this morning Jet Greaves will make his third straight start. Hear Blue Jackets hockey on the Fan with coverage at 7. This update is sponsored by the Waterworks and Header Plumbing, Drain, Heating and Cooling, together to serve you better.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Tom Tiberi here.
Well, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me.
Oh,
I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Thursday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next 3:920. The Big Ten apparently choosing money over Michigan and USC. Yeah. You follow this Dellinger reporting, someone's got some splaining to do. I'd get in front of the mics pretty quickly if I were Ross and Top Gun Ted on that one. 10 o'clock, we will open up the mailbag. What would be, one of the questions we got was, Smarty Pants, how would you do the Big Ten? So we'll put some thought to that, and we'll put that together at 10 o'clock. 10:30, Paul Feinbaum, as is customary. Normally we do Shelly Time 11:30. Today we're doing it at 9:45. I believe Jody's playing golf at 11 or something like that. Is that what he's up to? Something like that. He's got some sort of fancy thing he's doing at 11 o'clock. So he'll join us at 9:45. Then 11 o'clock, we'll attempt to beat the house. I'm going to say that very loosely. Attempt to beat the house, because it has not gone great the past couple of weeks picking NFL games here on a Thursday at 11 o'clock after what was a pretty hot stretch. I did want to start here, though, because when you see the line, it is staggering. Ohio State minus 32.5. against UCLA. This is a brand. This is a brand that you're very familiar with. This is an iconic brand in certain sports and absolutely in basketball. But even if you are not of an age, and many of you out there listening are not of an age where you remember Bill Walton or Lou Alcindor or any of that, you might be of age where you remember Ed O'Bannon and Toby Bailey and those teams, and Charles O'Bannon, those teams that won the national title all the way back in 1995. But you definitely remember Kevin Love, and you definitely remember Russell Westbrook, and you definitely remember that when that thing is going in basketball, that can be a national championship-level program. Mick Cronin's got a hell of a team over the last several years since he's been there, and I didn't know if that was a fit that would absolutely work. But there is something magical about those colors. It is not revered in the way that Tar Heel blue is, Carolina blue, but UCLA blue is pretty dang close. And there is a reverence for it. And there is a glamour to that program. So how did they get here? How did UCLA get to a point where in the middle of November, they're stumbling into old Columbus Town, 32.5 point underdogs in the Big Ten Conference? The answer to that is long and convoluted and probably a million steps. And we continue to do a show in Columbus, Ohio, so I'm not going to spend 3 hours doing it. But the long and short of it is wildly mismanaged. Wildly. Missteps all over the place in coaching, missteps in athletic department. They had, I was fascinated by this because of the story this week about how they're moving out of the Rose Bowl and Pasadena is suing them. And the reason for this is that they're going to go from 25 miles from their stadium from campus to 12. And their hope is that moving to SoFi will increase the student body and their fans coming to their games. I don't believe that it will. I don't think it's going to make that much difference at all. I understand why you'd want to play in SoFi over the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl is a 100-year-old stadium, and while it's beautiful at a sunset, it's an old, old building. SoFi is state-of-the-art. You have suites. You have all those things that you can kind of you try to build around. But the reality is that SoFi is way too big for them, too. In 1963, there was actually a plan for an on-campus stadium at UCLA, and at the it had quite a bit of momentum. And it ended up getting shelved, and the state of California basically said, hey, you know, we have the LA Coliseum, play there. Like, we, you know, we're not building you a new stadium. Because remember, this is part of the University of California university system, UCLA is. So they have this plan in 63. It doesn't work. So they play at the Coliseum till 72, and then they play at the Rose Bowl from that point on. They are a 58% win percentage team all time. They are 639 and 449 all time. They're basically, from a winning percentage standpoint, a carbon copy of Wisconsin. That's really what they've been historically. They are not USC. No one's confusing them for that. But they also shouldn't be this. They should not be where they are. They have massive, massive donors who can write checks if they want to. The problem for UCLA is their athletic department has been really mismanaged for a lot of years, trying to be the ideal of what many of those Pac-12 schools were, which was all of the Olympic sports, because why? They're training ground for Olympic athletes. They took great pride in that. But you can't keep writing checks for that if you want football to be at a certain level. And football, as we all know, writes the checks. If you're looking for some specifics for them, and for me, even in my lifetime, there's been a couple of instances where UCLA football kind of reached a point of real national significance. The Troy Aikman-led team in the late 80s, which I remember only because there was a Sports Illustrated cover that had Troy Aikman and Rodney Peete on it. And those two teams were going to play at the end of the year, and it was this massive game, UCLA and USC in the late 80s. I have no recollection of that at all. I remember the Cade McNown years. I remember those years pretty good with J.J. Stokes. Deshaun Foster came right after that. Of course, he was just recently removed as coach. And so I remember those years very well. When Chip took the job, you thought, okay, there might be something to that, right? And it just never really took off. The last coach that they had there that won 60% of their games, Jim Mora did it from 2012 to 2017. He went 46-30 and ended up getting fired. Chip just won 50% of his games. There just isn't anything. Terry Donnie, who had a 20-year run from 76 to 95, where he won 66% of the games. And quite honestly, that's probably the golden era of UCLA football, is probably in that stretch. But I will tell you this, if the Big Ten is going to be a conference where it's always going to be a conference of significance, but if it's going to be a conference that potentially adds a fourth window, that continues to drive revenue, that continues to make money, that continues to provide television shows that people want to watch, a program like this has to be better. It has to be. And they have got to land this coach. Because if we've learned anything from Nebraska, from Michigan, if you miss on a coach twice in a row, there is a hole that you are digging that you are not even aware of that is so hard to get out of. And I think that's where UCLA is right now. I think they could very easily, with a wrong coaching hire here, be a completely irrelevant program. They're damn near that already. 32.5 point underdogs here on Saturday.
Feels like there are several in the Big Ten that kind of run this risk of one head coaching fire will put them into a pit. The other will keep them there. And for UCLA, it's the next head coaching hire could keep them in said pit. I think it was UCLA that was running in the red.
They were,
you know, upon entry into the Big Ten. And so you don't even think about the Bruins coming into the conference without USC making a pitch for them. Or USC basically saying, you want us, they've got to come too. And I just don't see it for this program anymore to return to a relevance that is anything bigger than, hey, maybe make a bowl game. Like, I think certain programs have just hit their ceiling based off of years of poor decision making and then just a lack of what I sense is desire to be anything better than from boosters from the athletic department. Now, you know, them getting Nico Iemaliava was, I thought a step in the right direction, because of any team in the country that is underperforming, I think the first thing you look to is your quarterback. And if they were serious enough to go get a guy who tried to hold up Tennessee for some money, then they had to have some behind it, because he's not just coming for free. But that isn't enough.
Bo, I feel duped by UCLA, because you mentioned Terry Donahue. That was on the heels of like Dick Vermeil and them playing in Rose Bowls against Ohio State.
Yeah.
So I feel like growing up, I heard stories of UCLA and Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. And UCLA was in their best period. And you mentioned Troy Aikman, number one pick to the Cowboys. And then the Cade McNown years, I remember really well. And you saw USC, UCLA always on the TV. It was big. It was such a rivalry. And those games at that time did mean something. UCLA really hasn't been anything outside of that, though, ever. They've got one Heisman Trophy in their history. We mentioned the quarterbacks. That's about it for the quarterbacks. Like, they have not had a lot of great quarterbacks. They had Josh Rosen. They had Brett Hundley, who had, you know, a little bit of run. Dorian Thompson-Robinson. J.P. Lozman was there. Some guys that ended up getting drafted in the NFL. They've never really had the quarterback. And Chip Kelly got out of there. He got them the quarterback.
He did.
And that quarterback's playing for Oregon now. Because when Chip left, he left too.
And they did get the quarterback. Isn't that something?
Yeah. And he said, I'm going to greener pastures. So I feel like my whole life has been a lie. And I've been duped by this UCLA football program. Because I just happened in my formidable years to be right on the heels of and right in the middle of their best time ever as a program. So I thought they were better and meant more than they were.
A little bit of a paper tiger, right?
Yes.
They look beautiful. There's all of it, but the substance isn't quite there. Like I said, historically, they're basically Wisconsin is what they are historically.
Speaking of them looking beautiful, I would not hate a color-on-color matchup this weekend.
Boy,
in
neither.
The shoe. Gosh,
I wouldn't either.
That'd look beautiful at night.
I'm going to give you two things to sum this up, though, that gives me some reason for optimism about what UCLA can be. Number one, what you just said. They got Dante Moore. They got him. He was a five-star, and they got him. So that tells me that there is a fire that burns within from them to be great, because they got him in an NIL world. So they got him to sign. They got him on campus. They didn't keep him, but they got him there. And I'm going to give you one other number, and it's a pretty staggering one. The endowment at UCLA is $9.79 billion. So if they want to throw money around, they can throw money around. If they want to. If they want to take football seriously, they can. Ross Dellinger with some reporting. Looks like this private equity thing is going to happen. I'll give you some thoughts. We've talked about it a lot. It feels like a lot changed for Ohio State in 6 weeks. They are now all in on this. It looks like Michigan and UCLA, or USC rather, are saying, we're good. We're going to sit this one out. Could this be the beginning of the end of the Big Ten? My God. Heavy topics here on a Thursday. We're off and running. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Unlike your deadbeat uncle, we'll never leave you stranded in a ditch when you were six. This promo may have been a touch too specific. The Fan.
Hey. Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Morning Juice is now live on YouTube. Join Bobby Carpenter and Jeff Thedoff weekday mornings from 6 to 8.
Just search 971 The Fan to catch the live experience or watch on demand.
The Fan. Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Plenty of sunshine in the forecast for today and not as much wind. Daytime highs will top out in the low 50s. And then for tonight, partly cloudy skies overnight with our lows right around freezing. We end the work week on Friday with mostly sunny skies in the forecast and a little bit warmer with our highs getting in the mid to upper 50s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 weather impact forecast.
The two most mature people working at the radio station. And that's just because they wear pants.
Pervert in the skivvies.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays at noon.
The Fan. Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat. Because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
This from about a little less than an hour ago. Ross Dellinger on X. UC Investments has agreed to proceed with the Big Ten investment at the same $2.4 billion valuation, even if two schools don't commit and extend their grant of rights per his sources. So the two schools that would potentially not commit, they've made it very publicly known, are USC and Michigan, that those would be the two schools that would sit it out. Michigan has been very vocal as to why they don't want to put any part of this. Reader's Digest version, they don't need it. And USC, if you read some of the reporting on this, comes down to the notion that schools like Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan would get more than they would. There would be tier one money for those schools, and USC was not included in those schools. Whether they deserve to be or not is up for your own debate and interpretation. I have not come across anybody that covers Ohio State, certainly, I suppose we could put it on the poll. Would you want Ohio State to take private equity money as part of the Big Ten's new deal of grant of rights? My hunch is it would be no, that they wouldn't. I outlined this earlier in the week, Ohio State's thinking here and how it's changed in the last 6-7 weeks or so. And one of the things that I think Ohio State is probably hoping for here is, number one, they're going to get more than anybody else. Number two, it gives them stability long term. Number three, it allows for them probably to have more power than they've ever had in terms of determining where the Big Ten goes, not just with future media rights deals, but also for future expansion and whatever comes down the road in terms of the Big Ten Conference, a more powerful voice than they've had. I would argue Ohio State's always had a powerful voice. They've just chosen not to use it. They've almost been too good of partners through the years, and they've not thrown their weight around enough and have kind of just gone along for the ride with a lot of this stuff and have supported the Big Ten quite vocally. I mean, the additions of Rutgers and Maryland were, I mean, Gene Smith was on Rothman and I's show talking about how great that was going to be. And he was carrying the water for the league on that. I don't like it. I don't. And I do think that either Top Gun Ted or Ross needs to get in front of a mic and have complete clarity on why Ohio State would want to be a part of this. Because I don't think this is very popular with Big Ten constituencies. If Ohio State needs it, then that's a real problem. If they're in a situation where they need this type of influx, I do not understand being tethered to some of these programs over the next until 2046. There's no proof in anything that we have seen that when you give these programs an influx of money, they are suddenly going to get better. There just isn't. There's no proof of it. So I'm very skeptical of this. And I do think an explanation is required if this goes through.
Yeah, I was wondering. And I think we had talked about this over the last couple of weeks with the private capital influx of cash as to maybe Ohio State was allowing Michigan and USC to take the lead on their dissension because those schools. I mean, the fact that Michigan came out and said it's like a payday loan should have everybody as the biggest red flag I think you can wave with this.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you're selling off your conference to an entity that or you're selling off part of your conference to an entity that's not involved with sport. Or that's not really involved with colleges, universities, the collegiate experience should have everybody worried. I would hope that there is an explanation coming from Ohio State. but I don't, I guess at this point, don't expect one because there wouldn't be reporting that this is going to go ahead if Ohio State, Michigan, and USC were against it. Like, there has to be one of the bigger programs that is okay to do this for this to go ahead, as far as it's gotten. Because even some of the reporting says that if Michigan and USC don't agree with the other 16 schools, then they're on the outside looking in terms of money. And I read that maybe as a way that Michigan and USC could say, okay, see you later, bozos. And I wouldn't be too disappointed if that was the case with Ohio State. Because if you're changing the grant of rights, maybe there's a way for entities not interested in retaining or maintaining the current grant of rights, or I guess what would be a changed grant of rights, to say, all right, we're out.
Yeah, they could get out until 2036, according to the previous grant of rights. So
because we talked about the decision-making at UCLA, decision-making at Rutgers. Mm-hmm. These schools are stupid, and they've been stupid for the last 20 years, so why are you trying to be in bed with them for another 20 years if their decision-making will affect you at a greater pace with signing this deal?
The two things jump out to me. You mentioned the payday loan, the way that Michigan phrased it. That's what it seems like. It seems like we can't handle our business. We're not running a good business. So, boy, $100 million would be nice right now. That's what it seems like to me. And I need somebody to tell me it's not that. And then the other thing that jumped out to me, according to the Dellinger reporting, is that the private equity firm, it's a University of California system private equity firm that's going to give you the influx of cash in exchange for 10% of future earnings, is the Reader's Digest version of it. What jumped out to me in the reporting was they're moving on. They're moving forward with it, even if Michigan and USC say no. So if that doesn't tell you that it's maybe too good a deal for them, I don't know what does. Furthermore, to me, and this is, I'm coming from somebody who's been talking NFL for 8 years now. If you were going to maximize what you could get on a grant of rights, wouldn't the smart way to do it would be to go to the table with the SEC and sell one package together to multiple entities? I mean, we keep talking about the NFL. That's the NFL. The NFL goes all as one. It says, you get this, and this is the cost for that. And it's the most successful league in the world for that. You're trying to get to that point. Why would you sign anything to 2046 that wouldn't include some sort of ability to go to the table with all the biggest brands to maximize your money?
It makes sense, Bo, what you just said with that. You can't get the NCAA to agree on anything, though. And I know the Big Ten could go outside of that, but these two have never done that. And the SEC and Big Ten have even had arguments here over how the CFP should be with automatic qualifiers. Yep. And instead of working together, they're always fighting each other. What you just said made me think that college football needs to have its own thing with like the top 64, top 80 mm-hmm. programs or something breaking off like we've talked about before. Yeah. And just having their own thing for college football with their own national championship. And then we could kind of keep the NCAA and everything for all the other sports. But T-Bone and Tyvus had, I believe it was Jason Rhodes on at 8:30, who explained all of this kind of stuff pretty well. And kind of making it sound like it was, and I don't really know what the difference is, kind of like it was more private capital than private equity. And it's all so weird to me. But the thing to me is, and you guys kind of mentioned this, you're taking the money now. Mm-hmm. Somewhere down the line, somebody's got to get paid.
Yeah.
And why are we to think that these programs are going to take this money, maximize it, use it to the best of their ability, get themselves on better footing to where you don't have to do this again down the road and you're not always owing someone?
We all loathe Michigan. I get it. But they're not idiots. They're not idiots. The people on their board are not idiots. They're not. So we just need to have some transparency around here on what Ohio State is gaining from doing this and why this is something Ohio State feels the need that it has to do. Why is Ohio State not aligned with probably the two most similar programs in the conference in Michigan and USC. That's what I think we're owed an answer to on that front. And there needs to be complete transparency on that. Ryan Day, complete transparency on what his team has accomplished so far and what is still in front of them. Plus Bo Jackson, could the next month and a half, his role be a big one? We'll get to all of that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE. Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
Saturday night, UCLA comes in here, 32.5-point underdogs. It's the second straight game where the line is Buckeyes 30 or more. There's going to be one more next week, and then you've got Michigan after that. Ryan Day's job is to make sure that his team is as sharp as possible for that game up in Ann Arbor. One of the things that I've noticed in his press conference is a pretty matter-of-fact tone in terms of what his team has accomplished so far. Here is Day on that.
Well, you know, the first thing is that everybody has to understand, players, coaches, everybody, how exact, how on point we have to be. And that's every week. And the teams that we're playing now and the teams that we're playing in the future, well, we got to be good. And that's going to take great energy. It's going to take great finish. It's going to take great focus. I mean, it's going to take everything we got to get there. And so it's one thing to say, okay, we've done X, Y, and Z up until this point, but that means absolutely nothing, like zero. We've done nothing. So I understand everyone's got to talk about those things, but none of that has anything to do with what we're doing moving forward. So if we think that has anything to do with this weekend or where we're going, then we're dead wrong. So, you know, we have to make sure we all understand that, and it's my job to make sure I remind the team, the players and coaches included, how good we got to be. And so that's really more the message than anything. I think, you know, the good news is, we have a chance. And that's good. And you know, we said this from the beginning. We want to be the first team ever to be back-to-back. And that's a tall task. It's easy to say. It's another thing to do. And so, you know, we're in the middle of it right now, but got a lot of work to do, and we got to continue to stay focused on what matters.
During Woody Hayes' tenure at Ohio State, they went full contact every practice. And there was this thing, if you read books about that era, you watch some of the documentaries that have done about that era, there, especially the 69 team coming out of 68, the thinking was the best game in college football every single week was not on Saturdays, but it was during the week right here in town when Ohio State would go good on good. That was the best game in college football every single week. This kind of feels like that. It's felt like that for a while. And I think if he can pull this off, it's one of the more impressive leadership examples we've seen. If he can pull this off. Well, if he pulls it off, it's immortality. If you go undefeated and win back-to-back national titles, it's immortality. So that stands on its own. But even if there is a slip up at some point before you get to the playoff, if he can pull this off and keep this team sharp while having them ignore the opponent every week and really just play themselves and hold themselves to their own standard, I really don't care what level of leadership or what level of coaching you're doing. Kids, college athletes, professional athletes, they know who they're playing. They do. This idea that you can show up every Saturday and be as sharp as a razor blade and perform to your own standard, despite what is the opposition is throwing at you, is a remarkable thing. That's why we marvel at greatness in this country. I mean, that's why you marvel at teams that are that chase it. If you think about the Patriots team that had the undefeated regular season, it is a David Tyree helmet catch from winning and having maybe the greatest season in the history of football. Well, what happened when they lost it? Nobody talks about it. The Warriors won 70, how many games? 73? Games? What happened in the finals? They lost, and nobody talks about it.
Blew a 3-1 lead.
They did. Don't nobody talks that. About it. There's a Seattle Mariners team that won like 120 games in the regular season. Didn't do anything in the postseason. Nobody talks about it. So the voyage they're on is one that is so unique in sport. It is one that is so damn near impossible to complete. But along the way, you have to maintain a standard while playing opposition that is clearly not in the vicinity of the standard. And they're going to do that again on Saturday.
And I also want to just say I didn't appreciate Tim May hitting the blocking sled while they're trying to talk to Coach Day yesterday. Like, I know they do.
Were they in the weight room?
Those Wednesday interviews, like, on the field at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, they bring out tables. But, Tim, let's be professional here and not practice your form and footwork while they're trying to talk to the head coach, who's done a masterful job of making this sharper every week. Mm-hmm. And they see the schedule the same as we do. And so it's not lost on me how right after the national championship, their focus went to Texas. And their focus throughout the season, at which what they've explained is you got to build that foundation brick by brick. And that's every single day you're going to be better. And every time he's had the chance to speak, it's been about the team that he has. Like, even on the field during games, when reporters have mics in his face, like, oh, we got to do this. We got to do that. We're doing this. We need to be focused on that. Like, this is something that has come from the top down and has trickled all the way through even the freshmen that are getting playing time and are getting playing, that are seeing it on the field. Because especially for freshmen, especially for younger guys who don't see the field as much, you start to kind of lose interest. It's just human nature. But the fact that he's rewarding their hard work in the spring and in the summer and in the early fall with actual playing time and meaningful games, I mean, everybody gets to eat from this, and mm-hmm. it will only make it stronger when they get to the actual part of the season that anybody, to your point, will care about or remember.
Reese, you know Tim May, even though he's 70, he's got to get that daily workout.
He hasn't retired.
In. Come on now.
Despite what he will tell you, he's not retired.
It doesn't matter. Bo, to your point, too, about Ohio State, they see the opponent. Yeah, they see that opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And they see winless Penn State, right? In the Big Ten, winless mm-hmm. Penn State. So it's easy to think, hey, this team is winless. On the opposite end, Ohio State's getting everybody's best shot that week. So you see winless in the conference, Penn State. You're not getting winless in the conference, Penn State. You're getting closer to the preseason number two, Penn State, when you're on the field. Are you getting, you know, UCLA this week that got blown out by Indiana? No, probably not. You're probably getting UCLA that won three in a row right off of a coaching change. You're getting everybody's best shot, too. And that's what makes it even more impressive, because you mentioned the human nature. You mm-hmm. can think, that's not the team you're getting regardless. So you've got to keep that level up, because their level's going to go up against you.
Absolutely. One of the things that's been really cool that they have done is slowly bring Bo Jackson along, and he got nicked up a little bit. Looks like he's all the way back. There's still some things that need to get sorted out. But they did ask Ryan yesterday when he realized that Bo could contribute this big this season. Here was his answer to that.
Yeah, I think we really started to figure that out in the first few games. As we started to get on the field and you saw him, you know, split a couple runs, and we saw it in practice and saw what he could do. And, we felt like his athleticism and what he could do. When he was a young player, in our camp, we saw, him run routes. We saw him, catch the ball. We saw him just, run. I think that we had really good times on him, and he came from a great program. And so, we felt really good about him. And then he wasn't able to play as much his senior year and played some, but, once he got in here, it was good to get him in here early, to get him indoctrinated and everything. And then we kind of say, by the time you get to the summer, you're not a freshman anymore. And then from there, it's kind of just grown every week. But, it's been good to see him, grow each week, get stronger each week, get more and more confidence. So, now we really need him to turn it on.
Yeah, they do. He's going to be very likely could be the X factor in this team as they get into the postseason, and certainly the Michigan and Indiana games, if that's the way that it all plays out to close out the Big Ten schedule. It's pretty remarkable when you think about that. Ryan mentioned that he didn't play much as a senior. Think about that adjustment from not playing much as a senior to now being in the mix at Ohio State. Here is Bo on adjusting to the college game.
Oh, yeah, the energy on the road is very different than being just in the shoe. Obviously I had to adjust to the physical side, the guys being bigger, faster, and stronger than they were in high school, but also, like, the mental side, you got to know your reads, know the plays, be inside the playbook.
You guys ever do the thing where I find myself doing this, especially when it's a true freshman? I remember doing this with Jeremiah and do it with Bo right now. You imagine the poor high school kids that had to tackle him?
Ow.
Like, you imagine the kids at Warren Harding had to tackle Maurice?
That couldn't have been fun. That could probably be like the least amount of fun. Like, I think about it every time someone talks about the Derrick Henry high school accumulation.
Right. Yeah.
Like, who's going up against that? Are we just doing business decisions when that monster of a human comes running at you?
I think of that all the time.
I would.
Like, who was the kid trying to guard Jeremiah Smith?
Right.
You know? Or I think of those poor kids at Bishop Sycamore trying to guard Carnell Tate.
God.
Actual grown men could not.
No, and even just like you do high school football every Friday night. You just think of some of the mismatches that happen over the course of a season just because of conferences and leagues and all of the things. But then all of a sudden you get a player like this who's a first-year starter at Ohio State, and you think, good Lord, like some poor sap had to try and tackle him.
I saw it Friday night, that game-winning touchdown when 6'4", every big school in the country is offering a kid, goes up over a 6-foot kid. Who's going to win that matchup every time?
Yeah. Yeah, the sheer physicality can just be startling. But yeah, I got a feeling they got a lot in store for him coming up in end of this month and into December and January. Jackets back at home after just quite honestly what is an odd schedule stretch. All of that stuff out west, bebopping all over Alberta and the state of Washington, and now back to play Edmonton tonight. Shelley time up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
Head to 971thefan.com to listen on demand and subscribe to all our podcasts. Wasting time has never been easier. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Morning Juice is live on YouTube. Weekday morning starting at 6.
Or on demand whenever you want it.
Yeah, whenever. Bobby Carpenter's at your beck and call. And Tito's there too, you know, to clean the toilets. Head to YouTube and subscribe today.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURN.
Favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
The gloves.
It's Shelly time.
Sponsored by Midwest Cards. Experience collecting in a whole new way.
All right, Jackets back at home after a long, as we chronicled when we did Shelley time from Edmonton, odd road trip that had them crisscrossing between Alberta and Washington and British Columbia, and now to come home and play Edmonton, who we just played a couple of nights ago. Joe, this is, I've all the years covering the Jackets, I've never seen this type of scheduling that's happened here over the last week. Have you?
No, it's been unique, but, you know, I don't know. I think the Blue Jackets would be happy to get back at the Oilers here at home.
Yeah.
Sold out building tonight. I like this. They're trying to create rivalries, and I think, you know, when you only see a team two times a year, it's good to do it close so there's a little bit of this feeling going on.
Okay, so now that makes some sense. I was unaware of that. So when you play the teams twice, they're trying to give you that kind of that playoff feel then. So that's the method behind the madness.
Exactly, because if we saw Edmonton, what, in March?
Yeah.
Would we really remember what happened? But no, this is fresh. This is a fresh feeling. So, yeah, that's the game plan or the thought on some of the scheduling, I think.
That's pretty cool, then. I can wrap my head around that. Jet Greaves going to go in net tonight. I heard Dean say that this morning on T-Bone and Tyvus. What did you make to the finish of the road trip in Seattle? Good to get the result. Obviously, he'd lost several in a row, so you get the result. And just in terms of the decision to go back with Jet tonight against Edmonton.
Well, the win in Seattle was a 2-1 slogfest victory. I mean, it was, they just had to kind of stick with their game, you know, no high flying action. It was more just system by both teams. I think a lot of teams need that type of victory to kind of get kind of lock things down, you know, kind of get in the thought of, all right, because you heard on that road trip a lot of like poor decisions. Coach was saying, you know, they made poor decisions, that's why they lost, or they, you know, should have stuck within their system. But, you know, they really grounded out in Seattle. It was a good win. They come from behind, and they had to go the distance. So it just kind of shows their patience as well. And there were moments where Jet had to make big saves. And this was a team on a back-to-back. He played two games in 24 hours. So he's, you know, but he was dialed in. So there's a lot of good from that last win. Plus, 3 out of 4 points to come home, now play here in a sold-out building against the Oilers. It's a much better feeling. And then for Jet, he's, you know, Elvis was feeling a little sick.
Okay.
And then, you know, we thought he'd play last game in Seattle, but he didn't. So I don't know. I wonder there, you know, what's going on. Jet's playing, they're both playing well.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of feels like Elvis has to earn the net again here. He's kind of, I don't know. They're just going to stick with Jet. And I like it. Jet last game. And I think that's kind of what happens when you're an athlete and, you know, you got to sit one out and the guy you're going, I guess they're going head to head to have this position.
Yeah.
You know, the other guy plays well. I mean, like he did last game. Yeah. I think Jet took advantage of it.
It seems like the top line is more than sorted. Three straight games with points for Fantilli. Looks like he's turning in the right direction in a big way. What have you noticed from his game specifically? Because when we talk about big picture things with this operation, if he's great, then that's the jumping off point, is it not?
Yeah. His speed, he brings a little more speed to that top line. You'll notice, like, I think things are opening up for him because, you know, everyone's talking about Marchenko.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone around the league, everywhere we go, it's Marchenko. You know, they know he's good. So there's a lot of focus there, but he brings more speed. You watch him, he gets the puck down low a little bit better. He's trying to work the give and go game with Marchenko and Voronkov a little, and that's kind of the mandate I think Marchenko gave him when he got on the line, is like, let's work with each other, create two-on-ones, you know, kind of that triangle, whatever we can to attack. And he's just bringing the speed. So, yeah, they've definitely brought it up to another level.
You are not on the call tonight, correct? This is an ESPN Plus. I think it's a 7:30 puck drop, so that means activities for us here at the Fan will start at 7 o'clock, but it's an ESPN national game. What is it like? I'm assuming you'll be at the building. What is it like for you to go to a Jackets game and not work it?
You're making an awfully big assumption there. But yes, no, I will be at the building.
I assumed, yeah.
Yeah, I will be there. It's pretty cool. It's weird watching a game without having voices. You know, that's the first thing I notice. You hear the puck, you hear the sticks, you hear the whistle, then the music plays. But, like, where's Mears calling the game and... Yeah, you know, so no, it'll be. I'm looking forward. I always enjoy it. I'm gonna work the couple suites, go around and see some sponsors and some people I know and some friends, and it's a lot of fun.
This is too really.
Forget.
Go ahead.
When you're working it, you forget what it's like to sit there as a fan and watch it.
Yeah. This is two fun games, bud. You got Edmonton in here. Then the Rangers are in here on Saturday. It's the 25th anniversary game at Nationwide. A bunch of guys that are very familiar coming back. Dubinsky coming back. Matty Calvert, which when it's fun, when I think of Matty Calvert, I was in the building when him and Nash fought. And
hell yeah, I forgot about that.
One of the craziest experiences I've ever had. It was already tensions were high for Nash coming back. And then I'm like, you know, like Bob and Nash are kind of going at each other. And then all of a sudden, Matt Calvert's going to fight Rick Nash. You're going, what the hell is going on, man?
Yeah. Classic confrontation. And then Monday is the Montreal Canadiens.
That's pretty good.
High flying.
That's a good stretch.
Yeah, that's a good stretch to get home and then off to Winnipeg right after. But listen, tonight is going to be, this is going to be a fun night. Mm-hmm. With the Oilers and Connor McDavid, who just absolutely ripped the show away, ripped their hearts out in Edmonton last game. So what was that, yeah, 3 days ago?
Yeah, I don't even know what day it is either. I can't imagine you. Like, where am I? What city? What day is it? I was having dinner with my family 2 days ago.
I had a scheduled meeting yesterday at 12:30 in Upper Arlington, and I was on the runway, standing on the tarmac in Seattle.
You're not making that.
I thought yesterday was Tuesday. Yeah, I didn't make it.
No. All right, buddy. Well, enjoy it. The Sweet Holders will be thrilled to see you as you press the flesh a little bit and enjoy taking one in as a little bit of a fan. And thanks for your time, buddy, and have you back on the broadcast on Saturday.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Have a great day. Talk to you later.
All right, there he goes. A little bit of Shelly time for you here on a Thursday. We'll open up that mailbag coming up next. Paul Feinbaum coming up at 10:30. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you haven't thought about Buckeye football today, I'm sorry to tell you that you're dead. Our condolences. Your home of the Buckeyes. The Fan.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Casting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. The Blue Jackets are back at Nationwide after a five-game road trip. Columbus will host Edmonton Thursday night at 7:30. You can hear that game on The Fan with coverage at 7. Jet Greaves will start in net for the third straight game. Blue Jackets will host the Rangers on Saturday. In baseball, for the second year in a row, Tigers ace Tarek Skubal is the AL Cy Young winner. Pirates righty Paul Skeens is the unanimous NL Cy Young winner. In college football, Michigan State was put on three-year probation and will vacate all wins from the last 3 years. Michigan State agreed to an NCAA punishment for alleged recruiting violations that occurred under former head coach Mel Tucker. On the field, top-ranked Ohio State hosts UCLA Saturday night at 7:30. Hear from OSU's head coach today at noon on the Ryan Day radio show. And week 11 in the NFL begins tonight with the Patriots hosting the Jets at 8:15. This update is sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Get a holiday loan from BMI and choose a loan amount from $1,000 to $5,000. BMIFCU.org/holiday loan.
The uncle you never knew you had.
The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour here on a Thursday. Paul Feinbaum coming up in 29 minutes from now. Time now, though, to open up that mailbag.
Our comment box is always open. Any feedback is mostly appreciated.
The mail never stops. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. There's never a let up. It's relentless. Every day it piles up more and more and more. You got to get it up. And the more you get out, the more it keeps coming in. Again.
Bishop and Friends present Emails.
Sponsored by Nationwide Children's Hospital. Donate today to light up the lawn and light up the life.
All right, let's start with this one from Gabe, and the subject is Gus Johnson. After the pleasantries about the program, which we greatly appreciate, Gabe, he writes, I've always been a Gus Johnson guy, but his act is wearing thin. Did you hear his call of the Indiana-Penn State game? Did he ruin it? So, for those of you who have not heard it, I believe we had it. Let's go ahead and play it.
Mendoza! In trouble! In zone! Touchdown! Wow! Omar Cooper! Unbelievable! Give him the Heisman Trophy now!
Okay. And this is, I did see this got a lot of attention this week. I know our buddies at Awful Announcing did a piece on it as well. This is my theory on it. And by the way, let's also remember that Gus Johnson's rise to notoriety and probably the reason that he ended up getting the Fox gig is because of how he called March Madness. Right? I mean, the Ron Lewis call alone is, and there's a bunch of them. I mean, that's where his rise came, was him calling March Madness. And it just felt like there was a stretch in the 2000s where every March Madness game he got went down to the wire. And so that's where you get all of those things. Now, for my kids, his world-famous Ohio State Buckeyes is their version of on the banks of the Olentangy. That's their version of it. That's what they know, is that. My theory on on why this happened Saturday, and it's an over-the-top call. Give him the Heisman now. We got a lot of football left to play, buddy, and he knows that. Is that Gus has to call a lot of bad games, guys. He's got to call a lot of bad games because Big Noon doesn't always get a massive matchup. I mean, I think there's a decent chance that next week's game against Rutgers is Big Noon. If you look at the Big Ten schedule for next week, there's nothing on it that would demand to be noon more than Ohio State versus anybody from a rating standpoint. They're in the TV business. So my theory on this, and I'm curious where you guys stand on him, and then also kind of what I'm putting out here from the theory, is that when he actually gets a great one, he really dials it up. And I think people expect him to dial it up, and sometimes he dials it up into the red, and that's what that call kind of was a little bit. Like, it's kind of incoherent at one point. It's a little bit like the great Jim Nance, who's my favorite of these guys, or on a very short list of my favorites, where he feels like he started doing that thing at the Masters and at the National Championship where we would have, like, that statement that he would make after it went final, like Simon Says Championship and all of that stuff that he would do in the Final Four, that sometimes it's just too hard to do and it falls a little flat. And that's kind of how I think we got here with Gus.
Yeah, I think he's the wrestler that's lived the gimmick for too long. And that's what his call, like, all the calls now have to be the Gus-gasm. It's like, they don't. You could have let the Omar Cooper catch breathe a little bit because you didn't really know if he tapped his toe in the end zone. Like, it's incredible, but I do think there, you know, in other times this season, you can dial it back just a little bit for those kinds of situations. The added dressing of give him the Heisman now, I mean, it is peak Gus Johnson. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's kind of lost its luster a little bit because I would just like guys to kind of tell me what's happening, what you think's happening, but there's Gus just... he might have been sick in that because he loses his voice twice, I think. He just cuts out. You're like,
yeah,
right,
it cracks on him a little bit.
This doesn't sound great.
Yeah, I don't know if he had been sick or there had just been so many plays in that game where he had gone all out that he lost his voice. I've never, ever, ever been a Gus Johnson fan. Now, when I say that, I will also say that Gus Johnson is one of the best in the business at that final call, that big moment, because he's always at 100. But the opening tip isn't the final game-winning shot or game-winning touchdown pass, and he was always there for me. So I've always disliked Gus Johnson while admitting that he's great on a big play or a call. Now, he's kind of lost it a little bit here recently, and I don't know, maybe we just see him more. And obviously, he got where he got because of things like the Ron Lewis shot that you talk about, because those are the highlights, right? Mm-hmm. And those are what people see, and they're like, oh my God, I love that guy because he's so good at that. But it's that all the time with Gus, and he's always driven me nuts. And I also think and I get it. It's the shock value media, first take media of everything. You have to, oh my God, give him the Heisman.
Yeah.
Well, he was 19-30.
Oh no. Yeah.
Put him in this place, you know. Like, I understand the sensationalization of everything because that's what media does now. Yeah. This is just, I've never been a fan of Gus because it's always that all the time and not every play is that.
Yeah, I think I do think, where do you guys stand on what I mentioned about he just doesn't get to call a lot of great games?
Oh, no, it's valid. Like, there's been a lot of crap that he's had to sift through. And the whole Big Noon experiment has just been a lot of bad, I mean, more so bad than good with teams that aren't relevant. And that's why I think he does dial it up for Ohio State. But, you know, him and Joel have become kind of the preeminent duo in terms of calling college football.
I mean, he's going to try and sell you Saturday, Michigan at Northwestern.
At the friendly confines of Wrigley Field.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they're going to have to sell. And if you're curious about next week and what I said about Rutgers, and this isn't scores, it's just a little bit of common sense. This is the Big Ten slate for next week. Rutgers, Ohio State, obviously. USC, Oregon, you can't do that. Michigan at Maryland. Michigan State at Iowa. Nebraska at Penn State, which is probably the one that they thought they'd be doing. Nebraska at Penn State, but that's a mess now. Minnesota, Northwestern. Washington, UCLA, you can't do that. And Illinois, Wisconsin. It's going to come down to Nebraska, Penn State, Michigan for the second consecutive week, or Ohio State hosting Rutgers. And I think they're going to choose Ohio State and Rutgers. I really do. I think it's in play. All right, this one from Ryan. And thank you for the kind. A lot of kind words here. So a few disagreements. We'll just get to the nuts and bolts of it from Ryan. You've mentioned contracting Big Ten teams many times. If you were czar of the Big Ten and had carte blanche to do whatever you wanted, what would the league look like? So I put some thought to this, and I know I've asked you guys to as well. I think what I settled on in a 12-team playoff world that we're in now, or eventually getting to a 16-team playoff world, I think what I would do with the Big Ten is I would reverse engineer the Big Ten and the Pac-10 and make it one conference. And I would have an East and a West, and I'd call one the Big Ten and one the Pac-10. And I'd have 12 teams in each. And I would have the Big Ten prior to Rutgers-Maryland expansion. So Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Iowa, Indiana, Purdue, Northwestern, Minnesota, Nebraska, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Illinois. And then the Pac-10 would be their Pac-12. Washington, Washington State, Oregon, Oregon State, Stanford, Cal, UCLA, USC, Arizona, Arizona State, Utah. The one change I would make is I would let Colorado go to the Big 12 and give me BYU. So give me BYU and Utah. So what I've created here is a bunch of blood feud rivals that have been there for 100 years. So I like games when people care on both sides of it, almost regardless of the record. That works for me. That's a good television show. By putting it all under one roof and adding all of these Pac-12 schools in and making one big conference, what you get is a fourth window that is always there for you. You can play at 10 o'clock anytime you want. You can play at 9 o'clock every single Friday night Eastern. You can play at 10 o'clock Eastern every single week if you want to. And so that's something else to sell. The other things that I would do here, I would do 12 conference games. Now, what we lose there is the ability for Ohio State to play your Alabamas and your Texases and all of that. But you can do that in the playoff now. You're going to see those teams in the playoff going forward. So I would go 12 conference games. I would go 8 division games. So the Big Ten teams, the old Big Ten, they'd play 8 games against their division. Then 4 crossover games. And it's, I would also have it that the 4 crossover games each year, 2 of them have to be tier 1 crossover opponents. 2 of them can be tier 2 crossover opponents. So for the sake of, and this would be malleable, you could move it year to year. So for right now, if I were doing this, the tier 1 opponents from the Big Ten side of it would be Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Iowa, Indiana, Nebraska. The tier 1 opponents from the Pac-10 side of it would be Washington, Oregon, USC, Arizona State, Utah, and BYU. So in the 12-game schedule for Ohio State next year in this hypothetical model, you would have to have 2 games against either BYU, Utah, Arizona State, USC, Oregon, or Washington. And then you could play 2 of the dregs of the league. And this works because this league has bottom feeders, and you need some bottom feeders. You need your Purdue's. You need your Michigan State's right now. You need your Minnesota's right now. You need your Northwestern's right now. Replace the MAC games and those games with the bottom feeder games. That's my grand plan. Not to expand and add teams that don't make any more sense, but actually to reverse engineer what this used to be. A Big Ten and a Pac-10. And oh, by the way, you could play the conference championship game if you had to have the stupid thing. You could play it at the Rose Bowl, which has plenty of space and plenty of dates available. We're up against it. I want to get your guys' thoughts on this. So you guys can present your models on the other side of this quick timeout. In addition to that, Michigan State gets got and Michigan skates. We'll explain all of that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Unlike your deadbeat uncle, we'll never leave you stranded in a ditch when you were 6. This promo may have been a touch too specific. The Fan.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Today's Buckeyes are back at the Shoe for a Big Ten battle with UCLA.
Live fan coverage starts Saturday at 2 with the kick at 7:30.
Every game, every season, proud to be your home of the Buckeyes, The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURN.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Plenty of sunshine in the forecast for today and not as much wind. Daytime highs will top out in the low 50s. And then for tonight, partly cloudy skies overnight with our lows right around freezing. We end the work week on Friday with mostly sunny skies in the forecast and a little bit warmer with our highs getting in the mid to upper 50s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
The radio couldn't contain us, so we've taken over YouTube. Catch Morning Juice weekday mornings at 6 by searching 971 The Fan.
Do it.
First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
And we are proudly and always sponsored by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for over 78 years. The holidays coming up. Buckeye Jewelry starting for just $99. Easton and Sawmill. Check them out. They'll take care of you. What beef, if any, do you have with my proposal from the email? Reverse engineering the Big Ten Pac-10.
I'm okay with doing that. I would still have 10 conference games to allow two for fun scheduling like Ohio State and Texas. I mean, in my perfect Big Ten, I'm going back in time and taking that phone call from Oklahoma and saying, absolutely, we would love to have Oklahoma and Texas in the Big Ten. We will throw Rutgers and Maryland into the Atlantic Ocean.
And you'd still keep the West teams?
I would not. I would not have taken them either. But I do think you take that phone call from Oklahoma, you get Texas, you're not even thinking about that.
No, you have a much more logical conference at that point.
Yeah, I also, I'm going back in 93 and I'm saying, all right, Penn State, you're good to come in. Nebraska, similarly, but Rutgers and Maryland, I want nothing to do with if I'm the Big Ten. I know, I think Maryland comes in and gives you a and basketball championship and some lacrosse championships, but in this football sense, they've done nothing. I would also have, the Pac-12 would be in my perfect world back. And so I would also take the Pac-12, what would remain of the Big 12, the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 10, and they would join together a group of five conference, and you'd start to have relegation. So I think the Big 10 would join with the MAC, and you'd have relegation. And I think that would make...
You're just trying to elevate Ohio, aren't you?
Well, in my perfect world, Ohio's competing in the college, competing for the college football playoff every year. And look...
Just think what the Bobcats would do with $80 million a year.
Yeah, I would also change the financing. In a big way, because if you get relegated, you're not getting even a fraction of what teams that are being serious about. Because I just go back to UCLA and I'm like, they're not serious. Like, yeah, they have a ton of money, their endowment's gigantic, they're about to be, they're being sued by the city of Pasadena for $1 billion.
Yeah,
like, guys, can't be in bed with these decision makers for 30 years. They're dumb.
So, Bo, I don't see anything wrong with yours. I'm with Reese. Like, I'm going back in time. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting U.S. or Texas and Oklahoma when they wanted. I'm kicking out Rutgers in Maryland, and I would bring in Notre Dame as well. And then I would go get Texas Tech to bring them in to help with Texas and Oklahoma and help that western side of it. Now, if we can't have USC or not USC, excuse me, Texas and Oklahoma in here, I'm still bringing in Texas Tech. And I was keeping Nebraska for the sake of those schools. I'm probably still keeping Texas Tech. And then I'm going to bring with me, I would think, I don't care if it's Cal, Stanford, Oregon State, Washington State, but throw some more bones to those Western teams. Maybe bring them all four and go to a 22 team.
Yeah, you got to add, if you're going to, on the Texas one, to poke holes in that, I would add, you need to add more teams if you're going to add Tech. Like, if you can't get Texas, then you need to add SMU, Baylor. This is the thing I think we've learned from this. I hope the powers that be learned this, because we are viewing this through scarlet and gray colored glasses, and it doesn't really affect us too much. But do yourself a favor and read John Cazano or read one of those guys on the West Coast. Go talk to Tony Castricone, and we have the voice of the Huskies, about what their winter is like. And there's a lesson here in this, and there was an arrogance to it'll all sort itself out. And I understand it. Those West Coast teams took that money, but to not, and I was the one screaming when they added USC and UCLA, you've got to give them more dance partners. They did, begrudgingly. Like, the idea that Washington and USC are getting half the money is or Washington or getting half the money is absurd, considering what they're giving you from a conference standpoint. But I think you got to go more, even more dance partners, and more so. The only negative I see with mine is you would lose that out of conference game, which we love here. We love that out of conference game. The trade-off for that is you would no longer be playing MAC teams. You'd no longer be playing Gramblings. You'd no longer be playing the random game against Charlotte or a game against Marshall. Like, you would be playing Pac-10, Big Ten teams every single game. That's the trade-off. I think it would probably be worth it, because you wouldn't play Oregon every year. You wouldn't play USC every year, but you'd play two of Washington, Oregon, USC, Arizona State, Utah, and BYU every year. You'd play two of those teams every year. And I think that there would be, then your cupcakes would be some combination of Washington State, Oregon State, Stanford, Cal, UCLA, and Arizona. So instead of playing those MAC teams, you're getting the game like the one we're going to get on Saturday with UCLA coming to town, 32.5 point underdog. It's an interesting exercise, and I think the Big Ten failed quite miserably in expansion. And this isn't a new take. If you've been listening to me long enough, I said it 15 years ago with Rutgers and Maryland that they blew it then. I think I've been proven right on this one. And the reality is that the Big Ten, the reason we're hearing about all this private equity and the reason we're hearing about getting back in line for expansion is because the Big Ten still needs to. Their preeminent rival in this business does not. The Southeastern Conference can sit at 16 and go, yeah, we're good. We're good. We don't need to add anybody. We're fine. But the Big Ten has to continue to try to look for things, whether it's Miami or Notre Dame, or they've always coveted North Carolina. But does any of that make sense? Does it make any damn sense to put North Carolina in this league?
No.
No. Just like it doesn't make any sense for UCLA to be in this league. And that all comes back to Maryland, Rutgers, and dropping the ball on Texas and Oklahoma. It all goes back to that. Because you could have even expanded in the Texas. Texas and Oklahoma were the jumping off point. You could have added Missouri and Kansas, and you could have had a section of the league that actually makes sense a little bit geographically with much more than those West Coast schools.
That's another fear with this Big Ten Enterprises thing, because now that that entity owns 10% of you, who's to say that this madness doesn't continue?
I think it will.
Right.
Like, I think they believe there's going to be another round of Big Ten of conference expansion that's going to come the next. It's going to come right after that ACC thing blows up and they can all get out of it in 2030. So that's when you're going to see more of it. Like, do we need Florida State and Miami in the Big Ten? I mean, there needs to be some common sense to this. Speaking of common sense, this is crazy. So Michigan State agreed Wednesday to vacate wins, pay fines, serve 3 years of probation for recruiting violations that occurred under former coach Mel Tucker. A negotiated resolution reached by the NCAA states that the former Michigan State general manager, they got a player they weren't supposed to. Here's what's crazy about this. They are vacating wins from Michigan State. And do I have this right? That one of the wins they had to vacate was the Connor Stallions Central Michigan game?
Yep.
That's correct.
If that doesn't tell you what college athletics is all about, I don't know what does. I don't know what does. And I think the reason that Michigan State didn't fight this is because they wanted an open and shut fire Mel Tucker with cause case. And they got one. Because they also had the sexual harassment allegations from 2023. So they have two. He can't bring litigation for them. Because remember, he got all that money after that 1 year with Kenneth Walker. He got all that money. And they fired him with cause for the sexual harassment. And now they got this. They can walk clean from Mel Tucker. That's what I think this is about. But that the Connor Stallions piece of this is maddening. Michigan State vacating wins. Michigan doesn't.
In the reporting on this, it says Michigan State self-reported themselves for a level 3 recruiting violation when they became aware of it.
Yeah.
Level 3.
Level 3, buddy.
NCAA has 4 levels on their violations. Level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4. Level 1 being the highest. Mm-hmm. The NCAA came out and said Michigan had level one violations and a level two violation. And don't give me this, we don't want to take wins away and we don't want to get the hell out of here. And if anybody ever cooperates with the NCAA again, you are idiotic.
Or you're doing it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Watch for LSU, kids. Watch for LSU.
It's getting messier by the day.
Oh, I can't. We're going to talk to Paul about it in 2 minutes. I can't wait to get the real truth on this. Paul Feinbaum in 2 minutes on that and other things. Bishop and Friends right here.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Bishop and Friends present college football's most polarizing figure.
Oh, Bob, listen to me.
Hey, Paul, how you doing? Come on back to our show, Tim. The audience hates you.
This is ESPN's Paul Feinbaum,
sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
For all your roofing, siding, and gutter needs, contact the Roofing Guys at theroofingguys.com.
All right, buddy. So did LSU fire him or not?
They just told him he couldn't coach anymore. They never fired him.
For our audience, I'm trying to explain it. You're knee deep in the muck on this thing. There, obviously, it's about the buyout and all of it. How did this get so messy? And Paul, from my perspective, when I look at the SEC, I think LSU is a top tier SEC job. But I don't know anymore after the last month or so. What do you give us the Reader's Digest of how we got here and where you think this thing's going?
Bo, you hear this cliche all the time. How are you successful in athletics? And it's called alignment. What does that mean? It means you have a president, an AD, all aligned with a football coach. Well, guess what? LSU doesn't have a football coach, an AD, or a president. Well, they actually do now, but because they just named the president who allegedly named the AD. So there's just total chaos down there. Literally nobody with more than a week's experience is in charge. And then you also have a governor who's a caricature from some 1930 movie about the South, running around firing people and making threats. And it's turned into one of the best jobs in the country. And now you can't even find a candidate because nobody knows what's going on.
Why would, I mean, that everybody keeps talking about Kiffin there. And he's the apple of so many's eye. If you're Kiffin, you look at that. Why would you ever sign up for that?
You wouldn't. And I think if you're smart, you probably have to take Lane Kiffin out of that for the time being and put him back, if he's going anywhere, probably to Florida. Now, Lane Kiffin now has been mentioned for the Giants job and who knows how many other jobs. And we're still not sure he wants to leave Oxford, but he also hasn't knocked himself out trying to tamp down that story either.
You know him pretty well, and I've said before, I so thoroughly enjoy your two's conversations, beachside in Destin or wherever you guys are when you have those. What do you think motivates him now?
I think he's gone from a phase where, you know, he went through recovery 3 years ago. He's completely sober. He talks about that. He's got his whole family around him. That means a lot to him, but I think what means as much from a football standpoint is being able to win a national championship. And the ultimate question is, can he get that done consistently at Ole Miss? He might get it done this year. He might not. I don't think he believes he can do it consistently. So therefore, I still think he's a legitimate candidate for Florida, where the program is down, but it's been proven too many times of what they're capable of doing.
Yeah, when they have the right coach, they can be as good as anybody. How do you see this LSU thing playing out then?
I think you'll see. I don't know which way they're going to go because they are literally on the dark side of the moon. But, yeah, I mean, there are plenty of candidates out there. The names that you hear for all the jobs in the South right now, Eli Drinkwitz is probably considered next after Kiffin. depending on where you go. John Summerall is the hot name at Auburn. Who is he? He's the Tulane coach. Doesn't mean much to a lot of people, but he's a hard-nosed defensive coach. Brent Key and Clark Lee, Key at Tech, Key at Lee at Vanderbilt are also names that are popping up. I'll tell you another hot name to keep your eye on for some of these jobs is Alex Golish, who was Josh Heupel's offensive coordinator a couple of years ago at Tennessee and is now the head coach at South Florida.
We know him well. He's a Dublin, Ohio kid, so we know him very, very well, Alex. Paul, you know Brian Kelly pretty well, too. Used to have him on, I'm pretty sure, once a week. Do you think he's done coaching?
I don't know. I think Brian Kelly still seems like still feels like he's got something going, and quite frankly, I think he's done pretty well in the last two or three weeks. I mean, he couldn't have looked worse the day he was fired. But Bo, all the controversy I think has helped him a little bit. You know, maybe it wasn't all his fault, even though it really was all his fault.
Yeah. All right. We had round two of the college football rankings. We all know this is going to sort itself out on the football field over the next 3 or 4 weeks when you look at the schedule. But one thing I try to do is look at trends. Are there things that they are setting up week to week with the poll? Were there any trends that you identified this week in the poll?
Just nothing more than confusion. You know, the ACC is probably where it's the most confusing, where depending on how you view Miami's ranking. I think this week is going to be, we'll see some clarity, especially with Notre Dame. If they win, they're probably back in a great spot. If they lose, they're out. Oklahoma could be out this week. Texas, to me, is going to also be one of the most intriguing. And I've argued, a lot of people don't like the argument, that Texas, with three losses, should be a legitimate team because of the Ohio State game. Meanwhile, you have schools like Indiana playing, Kennesaw State, and Indiana State and whatever other state they played. But a lot of people, and I've been on these shows, Bo, where, they're undefeated. You have to give them credit. Well, I realize that, and I'm not arguing against Indiana, but some of these two-loss teams, to me, don't knock me over because of their non-conference games.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things of determining how they're going to reward teams versus, you know, who they played. And they've always said strength of schedule plays a part of that. You mentioned the ACC. Is there a scenario where they get skunked? I can't imagine it, but you start to look at the schedule and you go, I see JMU sitting there, and I don't think those teams are legitimate, obviously. But at the same time, it's not crazy when you think of the ACC and the way that they're ranked in this thing, because it's a mess.
It could go incredibly bad for them, but knowing this committee like we know them, they'll find room. They're the UN of college football. They're very inclusive, and everybody should get a fair shake.
Yes, they do. Speaking of fair shakes, one of the topics that we've been discussing is there a scenario where the Big Ten can get to four? And the most likely scenario of that would be USC or, God forbid, up here, Michigan. And it would take a loss by Oregon or a loss by Ohio State, and then maybe there's conversations. So let me pose this to you. Do you think it's more likely that the SEC gets five or the Big Ten gets four?
I think it's more likely the SEC gets five, because I think I don't think that is a big stretch. And I think after this weekend, we'll have a much better idea. But the Big Ten, I mean, USC could get there, but I'm not putting that much faith in Lincoln Riley, who, by the way, is another name that has risen from the dead. His name has been linked to a number of places.
Well, I think of him. I mean, wasn't he, you can correct me, but I thought LSU, the reason he's at USC, from my understanding, is LSU came knocking, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, and USC's available? Do I have that right, that timeline?
He was LSU's first choice. You are correct.
Yeah. So that would be a situation where can you win in a place in the South that maybe you're struggling to win at USC? So somebody to watch there. You mentioned Oklahoma and Texas. From your vantage point, from Greg's, from the league's vantage point, Oklahoma is in Tuscaloosa this weekend. Texas is in Athens. What's the ideal SEC scenario that plays out this weekend?
I mean, I think in a strange way, Oklahoma beating Texas, or excuse me, Oklahoma beating Alabama wouldn't be the worst thing to happen, because Alabama then only has Auburn left, and it would get in at 10-2, and I think Oklahoma then would be in a position to get in as well. Texas could beat Georgia. Georgia still has to play Georgia Tech, And then they wouldn't go to the SEC championship game. And by the way, right now, you know what people are saying in the SEC? We don't want to go to the SEC championship game. So that is really interesting. And ultimately, A&M could just run the table and or lose to Texas. The SEC, I don't think, is picking and choosing. However the SEC gets to five is going to be happy and satisfying to Greg Sankey.
Do you think there's any scenario where we get rid of these conference championship games? Because we hear the same thing here. I mean, you're looking at a scenario, whatever you think of Indiana, if both run the table, and Indiana's definitely going to run the table, Ohio State obviously still has to beat Michigan, but if that happens, you're going to talk about number one versus number two playing in a game for what? And you dealt with this last year in the SEC. Like, if I'm Bama and I look at who Bama's played the last 8 weeks, I wouldn't want to go play Georgia again.
I talked to the head of the CFP Management Committee last week, Mark Keenum, when I was in Mississippi State, and he said it's not going to pass this year, but ultimately they want to get rid of they want to extend to 16. Mm-hmm. So if they extend to 16 2 years from now, 3 years from now, Bo, that's the end of the championship games. They will have no meaning at all. They don't have any meaning now.
They have to. Yeah, it's just ridiculous to play a high leverage game like that and then go embark on a playoff. Good stuff as always, bud. Thanks for your time. We'll do it again next week.
Enjoyed it. Thanks, Paul.
There he goes. Paul Feinbaum, the Paul Feinbaum Show, ESPN, and the SEC Network joining on the Bryan Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We do a little thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you consider yourself a Buckeye fan, you've come to the right place. This is your heritage sports talker and home of Ohio State Athletics, The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Do the holiday parties...
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Love football, love wings. Put those bad boys together and you get Austin and Burn live at Roosters.
Presented by Bryant Heating and Cooling.
Large amounts of football and all the ducky sauce you can handle. Mondays on The Fan's YouTube channel.
When it comes to your...
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
It's almost Football Friday. All play and no work.
Sponsored by Tansky Sawmill Toyota.
Your home for football, The Fan. Drink recommendations, movie reviews, sports discussion, and whatever the hell Reeser does. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Thursday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
Week 11 in the NFL begins tonight in New England. The Patriots are going to host the New York Jets. On Sunday, the New York Giants are going to play the Green Bay Packers. Jameis Winston's going to start for Big Blue. On Wednesday, Jameis was asked how excited he is for that opportunity.
I want fans to know that I'm going to do my best. You know, obviously, I'm going to have fun, but I'm going to execute, have a surgical execution, and just play ball, man. Like, this is something I've been doing since I've been 4 years old, and I just get to do it in the greatest city in the world. I'm going to be saying it with my son. It's the greatest city in the world. Yeah, that's a Hamilton reference, if y'all don't know. Yeah, 10-year reunion.
Thing or not a thing.
So, I got to know him a little bit last year. That none of this is an act. None of it is. This is who he is. This is who he is. Now, his teammates love him. They love him because he's fun to be around. And he's no nonsense in the building when it comes. He's first in, last out. Like, that's true. I mean, he was, when he was at the Browns, like, he was a 5 a.m. get there guy. Putting in work. I mean, like, did that stuff. And if you're the Giants and you have this roster that's had just been ravaged by injuries with Neighbors and Scadaboo and Dart and all of it, you know what Jameis Winston is, guys? He's fun. He's fun. You may lose some games. He's probably going to throw some pick sixes. Remember praying to God to deliver him from pick sixes and all that stuff. But he's also going to throw for 375 yards and three touchdowns. You're going to move it up and down the field. And there is no pass that he... There is no throw on a football field he cannot make. And he believes that. I like him. I think it's fun. I think it's a fun thing. If I were a Giants fan, I'd much rather watch him play than Russell Wilson. So good job out of them.
Bo, you know how you feel about Gronk?
Yeah.
That's how I feel about Jameis Winston. And maybe it's because what you just mentioned.
Yeah.
I know what this is on the football field. This is a whole lot of passing yards, maybe some passing touchdowns, probably a couple to the other team. Like, this is 330 yards, two touchdowns, three or four interceptions. Like, I know what this is, and the Giants are going to lose 35-31.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So I don't know. Like, I just...
But is that better than losing 17-14?
I don't know.
To me, it is.
Yes.
I'd rather do that.
I would say it is.
I'd rather lose fun than lose boring. You're going to lose either way. They've had too many injuries. They're not overcoming it. But at least this is entertaining on a Sunday.
It's possible. The Jameis thing just isn't... Like I said, it's just not entertaining to me. Just because, and I'm not this guy, usually, but like, I also like know the past and know that he's been in trouble a couple times for things and everybody just loves the dude now and doesn't even think about those things anymore and whatnot. And I don't know. It's not a thing because the Giants are irrelevant and he's just basically a backup. He's just a backup quarterback at this point. So it's not a thing at all.
They're going to be the home team. And so it's going to be fun for the smattering of fans that are in attendance for this to have Jameis throw it all over the field. I also learned that it's the 10th anniversary of the Broadway play Hamilton.
Yeah.
They celebrated it back in August. Have yet to see it.
Dean Evanson is not happy with you right now.
That I haven't seen. Know that. Oh, that I didn't know that.
Yeah. Dean loves
big,
Hamilton.
Big
loves
theater
Hamilton,
guy.
Yeah.
I saw it. They did like the movie version of it. I saw that. But my wife went to it. She said it was great.
Jameis Winston, big theater guy.
Yeah.
On Wednesday, Tigers ace Tarek Skubal won the Cy Young Award, the AL Cy Young, for the second year in a row. 28-year-old lefty is the first pitcher to claim back-to-back Cy Young since Jacob deGrom won in the NL. He's the first AL pitcher to do it since Pedro Martinez. Pirates 23-year-old righty Paul Skeens won the NL Cy Young Award. He's the first NL pitcher to do so, to be unanimous. He's the eighth pitcher in MLB history to win both the Rookie of the Year and the Cy Young Awards. Skeens is going to receive $2.5 million for winning that. It's a huge boost considering he only got $875,000 from his salary in 2025. Thing or not a thing.
Did Skeens make more money at LSU than he did at the Pittsburgh
More
Pirates?
From his base salary this year. So he got a $9.2 million signing bonus.
Yeah.
So,
but his base salary, I bet, was bigger at LSU. And certainly his girlfriend's base salary was much, much bigger.
Livy Dunn's like, I got more on my last picture I posted.
She's a sugar mama. Livy Dunn's a sugar mama is the way that that works. I did see a story today. I always have to be careful with this stuff. I assume that this one's real, but that there's all this talk that he really wants to play for the Yankees. Did you guys see this? And the general manager and the Pirates even addressed it. Was that real? I don't know if it was or not, but I wouldn't blame him for that. But the one thing that jumped out at me at the story that may or may not have been AI was that the Pirates hadn't signed a free agent in like 9 years or some crazy thing, which seems impossible to me. How much longer? So they have Skeens for one more year and then he goes to arbitration so that next year they can have him through 2026. They can have him. Then 2027, he can go arbitration. 2029, he's going to be a free agent. They're obviously not going to keep him. Would it be smart for them to trade him now for the bounty that they would get back?
I would say yes. And Skeens was asked about that report. He said, and he did the perfect, I have no idea where that report came from. Quote, okay. I don't know who said that. The goal is to win. The goal is to win in Pittsburgh. End quote.
Yeah.
I saw this, speaking of these two, there have been two individual seasons in Major League Baseball history where a pitcher made 30-plus starts, had a sub-2.50 ERA, had a sub-1 whip, had a 6-plus K to walk ratio, and won the Cy Young. Both of those are Tarek Skubal the last 2 years.
Stud.
And neither of them with any postseason success.
No.
The city of Columbus was ranked 15th among best large cities to retire in the United States, according to U.S. News and World Report's 2026 Best Places to Retire. The annual ranking evaluated 250 cities nationwide based on factors such as affordability, quality of life, healthcare access, taxes for retirees, and local job markets. Jacksonville, Florida claimed the top spot on the list, followed by Houston and Oklahoma City. Columbus earned an average score of 5.2 out of 10, and CBUS scored points for its relatively low cost of living, short commutes, and reasonable housing prices. Thing or not a thing?
You'd like that last line, reasonable housing prices?
This is news to me.
Yeah. So, okay. The validity of this is in question right away because the top spot is Jacksonville. I've been every place you can be in Florida. Jacksonville's not up number one on any list you could ever come up with. Not one. Now, Jack's Beach is pretty nice, but like Jacksonville City? No, not. And then I also don't understand how 5.2 out of 10 gets you ranked 15th. We're 50%, and that gets us ranked fifth. Oh, best large cities. Well, I guess the other part of this would be the context of how many large cities are there in the United States. Are there 40? So we're in the middle? Are there 30? Is that kind of the number? I wonder what that number is.
I'll say this. Oklahoma City being third? I'll be damned if we're going to be behind flat Dayton.
Tell you what. Of all the cities that I've been to in America, that is one of them.
Flat Dayton is better than Columbus? Oh, get the hell out of here.
The city. Better. Just real quick, Baylor has announced that their vice president and director of intercollegiate athletics, Mac Rhodes, who's also the chair of the college football playoff committee, is on a leave of absence for personal reasons, effective yesterday. Baylor says the university will decline to comment further at this time.
Oh, boy.
He's the CFP chair.
So,
nothing to see here.
Who's going to talk to us next Tuesday after the rankings?
They're going to figure that out.
Where's Ward?
What are we going to do?
Ward out there. Oh, my God. You got to be kidding me, dude. That is so perfect.
Could we sub in the governor of Louisiana?
Yes. Put him in there. You want a TV show? Put him in there. That's amazing. The chair of the college football playoff committee is on a leave of absence from his full-time job. Like, is he showing up next week? You have to replace him.
CFP is pretty stressful, man.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. We'll attempt to beat the house and use the word attempt loosely. It went very, very poorly last week. We'll try to do better. That's up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Common man, a radio veteran, has a large hemorrhoid. Timmy Hall, a good, clean boy. Moonlight, Sandman's hemorrhoid. Common man and Timmy.
Weekdays at 3.
The Fan. This time.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Listening from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. After a five-game road trip, the Blue Jackets are back at Nationwide hosting the Edmonton Oilers tonight at 7:30. Jet Greaves gets the nod in net for the CBJ for the third game in a row. Jackets are back at home against the Rangers on Saturday. Tonight's Hockey Fights Cancer Night. Again, face-off 7:30, coverage on the Fan 7 o'clock. In the NFL tonight, week 11 begins in New England. The Patriots go for their eighth straight win hosting the Jets at 8:15. In college football, number one Ohio State hosts UCLA Saturday night at 7:30. Hear from OSU's head coach today at noon on the Ryan Day radio show. And in college hoops, Ohio State's women's squad looks to improve to 2-0, hosting Bellarmine at 6:30. Tyler Danberg is going to have the call on the Fan, too. That's 1460 on the AM dial, with pregame coverage at 6:15. This update sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, call Mark Levy's office at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP. That's 1-800-MORE-SLEEP. Or visit him online at sleepbettercolumbus.com.
Our top men are working on everything. Except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Thursday edition. It's time to attempt to beat the house.
Beat the house.
Sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Visit their Grandview, Gahanna, and Westerville locations to experience the best in craft dining and distilling. Learn more at highbankco.com.
Okay, guys. We're not even going to mention the records last week because we're looking forward. We don't look in the rearview mirror. We only look forward through the front windshield. The only thing I will say is, Bo, you are still five games over 500 for the season.
You know what, Baker? Give me my record. Punish me, Daddy.
Nope, not going to do it. I won't do that to you. The Indianapolis Colts and the New Orleans Saints are on byes this week. We kick it off tonight, Thursday Night Football. The New York Jets are in New England taking on the Patriots. Big number here for the home team. They are 13.5-point favorites.
All right. I can't preach accountability to the teams that we talk about, my own damn children, if I can't take accountability myself. I went a pathetic 3-11 last week, and so I appreciate your attempt to shield me. That is a joke, and I deserve the public flogging that comes with it. That is pathetic. Now, that being said, the New York Jets cannot execute the forward pass. They didn't really try. They got two special teams touchdowns against the Cleveland Browns last week, which allowed for them to win. New England might be playing the best in football right now. 13.5? Yeah, I'm good. Give me the Patriots 31, the J-E-T-S, Jets, 2.
Yeah, I also will take the Patriots here. And I can also not shy away from my horrible record this week, this past week, and this season. 2-12 in week 65-84 overall. It's bad.
We got to get better.
And we will. We will get better next week.
Nope.
I just wasn't going to do that to you guys.
That's fair.
I know
and
that.
I appreciate you. I appreciate it.
Transparency, Baker.
Sunday morning, we are over in Madrid, Spain. The Washington Commanders and the Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins are the favorites in this one. You're laying 2.5.
This is from Estadio Bernabeu in Madrid. And I think the Dolphins have a little bit of juice from last week. I'm not sure how it'll carry over in Spain. Give me Miami here because I get a field goal.
Yeah, this is... this is the one location in Europe that if the Browns ever went to, I would say, yeah, I'd sure like to go to that one. I'd like to go to that one. This is Real Madrid, Kings Club. Come on. I'm with you. Miami's turned the corner a little bit the last couple of weeks. I think they keep it going with Achan. Washington's got big problems defensively as well. No Daniels. Kind of a lost season for them. Giving Miami, I'll throw the 2.5.
To the 1 o'clock slate, the Cincinnati Bengals back in action this week. They're in Pittsburgh taking on the Steelers. The Bengals are the road dogs, 5.5 points.
Yeah, I find myself kind of overthinking this one because I don't understand how Pittsburgh could be favored by 5.5 over anybody. I just don't think they're worth a damn offensively right now. Now, the tonic for that is Cincinnati is terrible on defense, probably worst in the league. But I still think this one is a carbon copy of what we've seen the last three times we've seen Cincinnati play, which is a field goal or less game last three times out. So I think Pittsburgh could win this game. I wouldn't be surprised if Cincinnati does, but I think it's ultra close. So give me the Bengals and the points.
I do wonder if the news of Joe Burrow trying to make a Turkey Day return maybe put some juice into the Bengals. It's not going to help them defensively, but I think this is a close game that Pittsburgh eventually wins, but the Bengals cover.
The Carolina Panthers in Atlanta taking on the Falcons in an NFC South matchup. I don't love this number at all. Mm-mm. Falcons, 3.5-point favorites.
I'm sorry, Bo. Carolina plus the 3.5. Sorry.
Man, I got to tell you, I don't know how anybody beats Carolina ever. I really don't. I think they are the best team in football. I'd be shocked if anyone's within two scores the rest of the way. This worked last week, so I'm going to do it again. Panthers by 1.5 billion. I don't think this poor Atlanta. Why even show up? Why even show up?
It's a little something I think we like to call reverse psychology in the game. This should be a good one. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Buffalo to face the Bills. The Bills favored by 5.5.
Yeah, it's taken a little... Now, the crazy thing is the Tampa Bay Bucs are really battered. They're beaten up in a big way. They're not what they were a month ago at all. Buffalo's coming off getting hammered in Miami, and they're 5.5. Why would Buffalo be 5.5? Because they're going to beat the brakes off of Bacon the Bucks. That's why. Give me Buffalo and I'll throw the 5.5.
Yeah, I was thinking at least Buffalo by a touchdown. So I'm going to stick with that. Like, this is a get-right game for the Bills.
in a gross AFC South matchup. The Houston Texans taking on the Tennessee Titans. The road team here, the Texans, 6.5-point favorites.
And we're still not sure, but it looks like another Davis Mills game. So I like Houston to win, but I'll pick Tennessee to cover the 6.5.
So this got me thinking when I saw this one. When is the last time that the Houston or that the Tennessee Titans have been within 6 of anybody? And it was actually their lone win. They won at Arizona 22-21. The last time these two teams played in Houston, it was 26-0 Texans. Now, C.J. Stroud did play in that game, but you know who's playing in this game for the Texans? Their defense. I think it's going to cause all sorts of problems for Cam Ward and the Titans' offense. Give me the Texans. I'll throw the points.
This is an old school matchup here. Chicago Bears at the Minnesota Vikings, the home team, 3.5-point favorites.
Is this on me? Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I just think Chicago's better. And I think that the struggle is real with J.J. McCarthy. They won one. They won the opener. Remember, he was brutal in the first half, and then he was good in the second half, and they were able to win that. I like Bears outright. Bears outright at Minnesota.
Same. I think Chicago's on a little bit of a heater.
We just had the audio from Jameis Winston in Thing or Not a Thing. They host the Green Bay Packers this week, that being the New York Giants. The Giants are home dogs by 6.5.
I think you already called my pick, Baker, in the last segment. Give me the Green Bay Packers to win. But Jameis and the Giants are going to cover that 6.5. Like, this is going to be a field goal game, and it'll be like 33-30.
It's a lot of points, right? Yeah, I think Jameis scores points, too. I'll take the points. Green Bay wins, but a backdoor cover for Jameis.
The Los Angeles Chargers head all the way across the country to Jacksonville to face the Jaguars. The Jaguars, another home dog, 2.5 points.
I will say this. I besmirched the city of Jacksonville. I've had great times in the city of Jacksonville. It's good. It's fine. It's great for the cocktail party. It's made for that. But best place in Florida to retire? No, I can't. I can't do that at all. The Chargers are good. Jacksonville's not. And now you're talking about all of the injuries that have happened. And the Chargers have their own, but it feels like Herbert's kind of elevating all of it. I like the Chargers to win by a field goal.
Give me 1 second.
Go Chargers, go!
I only have one pot over here, so I can only do so many things. Give me Los Angeles.
The 4 o'clock slate. This is a fun one in the NFC West.
My favorite game of the week.
The Seattle Seahawks at the Los Angeles Rams. The Rams, 3.5-point favorites.
Give me Seattle to cover. I think Los Angeles wins this game. I think it's a field goal, but Bo, to your point, this could be the best game of the week.
This is my favorite game of the week. If I had to watch, if they said you can watch one game from this week, this is the one I would watch. These two teams are absolute buzzsaws. Shame on you, Las Vegas, for giving the hook. Shame on you. That's awful. That is an awful job by you, because this is a field goal game. I'd be shocked if it's not. I think both these teams are legit. I think they're both good. If it's 2.5, I take the Rams. I think the Rams are going to win the game. I think they're going to win it by a field goal. So the hook brings me back. Give me Seattle.
The other two teams in the NFC West playing at the same time. The San Francisco 49ers down in Arizona to take on the Cardinals. The Cardinals, 2.5-point dogs.
Yeah, it's not big enough. It's not big enough. The 49ers fans will travel like crazy to that. It sounds like Brock Purdy's coming back. I like the 49ers bigly.
Yeah, no route man for the Cardinals either. This is going to get ugly. I mean, San Francisco.
That's one of those ones where you do think, why is it so low? Like, who knows something?
Could it just be because the Cardinals, except for that last game, have been close in every Maybe. Game? All of them one-score games until
right.
that one.
Maybe that's it.
425. Oh, gosh. The Baltimore Ravens in Cleveland to take on the Browns. 7.5-point favorites. The Ravens are on the road.
Yeah, and the Ravens are going to cover by that, and maybe more.
I don't. This one's actually gone down. It was 8.5 yesterday, and now it's down to 7.5. The Ravens are not good defensively, The Browns are very good defensively. I think Baltimore is going to win the game, but oddly, maybe a weird slugfesty game. Give me the Ravens 20 and the Browns 13.
This is a big one in the AFC West, and you kind of feel like it's a must-win for the Chiefs. They're in Denver taking on the Broncos, and the Chiefs are the favorites on the road, 3.5 points.
And I think rightfully so. I think Kansas City gets right here. Denver hasn't beat Kansas City in a game that really, really matters in a long, long time. I think that continues. I think Kansas City goes out there and wins by 4 or 5. I think it's a pretty decent game, but I think the Denver offense just can't keep up. Give me Kansas City winning it, something like 28-24, something like that.
Yeah, those of you out there who still think Denver's got a chance to win the AFC, you come down to earth. If you still think that, going into Sunday at 4:25, this is where you come down to earth. Because here comes the wizard. Give me Kansas City minus the 3.5.
This should be a slugfest and maybe an NFC championship game preview, possibly Sunday night. The Detroit Lions in Philadelphia to face the Eagles, the home team, 2.5-point favorites.
I have Dan Campbell calling the plays on offense. I've got A.J. Brown mad at the Eagles on offense. Yeah, I like Detroit here, and I only need a field goal.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like Detroit outright. The only thing that's scary about all of this is I don't think you and I had many differences, and the way that this has been going, that's not great. So that gives me a little bit of pause to rethink it, but I'm with you. I like Detroit winning that.
We won't pick this now, but Monday night we've got the Dysfunction Bowl as the Cowboys are in Vegas taking on the Raiders. And as of right now, the Cowboys 3.5-point favorites.
Is it starting in week 13 teams can be flexed out of Thursday night games?
There were some new rules on all of this that were put in a couple of years ago, because I'm with you. Like, I'm staring at the 4 o'clock slate, and I'm going, why would the Seahawks and Rams go head-to-head with Kansas City and Denver while our Monday nighter is Dallas and the Raiders? Sometimes the most obvious answer is the correct one. It could just be that the Dallas Cowboys rate no matter who they are, no matter who what the record is. They just rate. And I think if you flip on a TV on Monday and you see those two uniforms, you go, well, this is aesthetically pleasing. Let's watch. And that might just be that simple. Speaking of issues and dysfunction, the Super Bowl champs, what is going on in Philly? We'll get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We used to have a billboard with our host's face on it, but only ugly people work here now.
You mama say you ugly, hey!
The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Only there was a radio show that constantly talked about Ohio State athletics. Well, good news. It's real, baby. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
Proud to be your flagship home of the Buckeyes. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Plenty of sunshine in the forecast for today and not as much wind. Daytime highs will top out in the low 50s. And then for tonight, partly cloudy skies overnight with our lows right around freezing. We end the work week on Friday with mostly sunny skies in the forecast and a little bit warmer with our highs getting in the mid to upper 50s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 weather impact forecast.
During this 10-second promo, Rothman will lose money gambling on something.
People like you come here and blow the family nest egg that built this town.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan. The best hair on the air. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
You know the scene in the cinematic classic Dumb and Dumber when Lloyd drives half the way across the country in the wrong direction and then takes the van and trades it in for the little scooter? And Harry goes, just when I think you couldn't be any dumber, you do something like this and totally redeem yourself. Just when I think college athletics couldn't be more dysfunctional, it does something like this and totally redeems itself. This is amazing. So Mark Rhodes, it's unbelievable. Mark Rhodes is the athletic director at Baylor. He is the chair of the college football playoff committee. He is under investigation at Baylor, who has confirmed multiple reports of an internal investigation into a confrontation between Rhodes and a Baylor football player. That player is tight end Michael Trigg. About the color of the shirt he was wearing during the Bears game against Arizona State. The school had issued a release saying the incident was thoroughly reviewed and investigated in accordance with university policies. Appropriate actions were taken and the matter is now closed. Okay. So that is still ongoing. I'm just going to read this from the Heather Dinich report. This came out 10 minutes ago because now this happened. Baylor athletic director Mark Rhodes, the current chairman of the college football playoff, we played audio from him yesterday because he's the guy who talks, is stepping away from both roles. The athletic director at Baylor, which I couldn't possibly care less about, but this one I do care. He is no longer on the college football playoff committee, and he's no longer the chair. CFP executive director Rich Clark telling ESPN today that Rhodes will step down from his role in the committee at this time for personal reasons. The CFP will likely try to replace Rhodes and work on naming a new chair. Will you? Will you? You don't say. Rhodes told ESPN that he had initiated the leave from Baylor role but declined to explain why. Adam Rittenberg of ESPN, Baylor told Rittenberg that the university received allegations involving Rhodes on Monday. The allegations do not involve Title IX, student welfare, or NCAA rules and do not involve the football program, indicating it is a separate incident from Rhodes' alleged altercation with the Baylor football player that I had mentioned from back in September. The CFP typically requires athletic directors on the selection committee to be active sitting athletic directors, which, by the way, that's stupid. Those guys don't have any time for this. The 12-person group is already one member short this season after committee member Randall McDaniel also stepped away last month for previous reasons. So they currently have 11 people, which that's better than 12. At least that way you can break a tie. But they need a new chair.
That's how it should be. Like an odd number so that you do have the tiebreaker. And also with athletic directors, like, don't sell them short, Bo. They don't have time to do all the things they like to do, but boy, do they love being on committees. That's their favorite thing.
It's always been my biggest beef with it. If you follow Ross Bjork for a day at Ohio State, he can barely watch the Ohio State game because of all the hands he's shaking and babies he's kissing. How could he possibly watch the rest of the sport? How could you watch a weekend of college football when you have a job that requires you to wine and dine from Friday afternoon through probably, in most instances, brunch on Sunday morning? And you're telling me you're going to watch the day in college football? What are you watching, cut-ups on YouTube like my kids?
On their phones?
Yeah.
Likely. I mean, the thing with Baylor and the tight end was he was wearing a yellow shirt and they were wearing grayish jerseys, and he just went up and shoved the tight end, allegedly, and said, "Why are you wearing that yellow shirt?" It's like, you're the athletic director, man. Why are you worried about what a tight end's wearing? Like, why are you worried about what any football player's wearing? Like, talk to the head coach and tell him to address it then. And then I think it's being alleged that Rhodes got into the face of an assistant football coach.
Well, who was the running back that we heard last year we played audio of that came to a recruiting visit to Ohio State and was wearing his school cleats and the color was blue and Urban made him take them off and put different cleats on?
Yeah.
I understand and I know that there are issues and things at every university, but man, does Baylor just seem like the most scandalous university ever? Like, the craziest things happen at Baylor.
I mean, they covered up murder.
Yeah.
They had player murder at Baylor.
Brick killed a guy.
Team. He did kill a guy. Yeah. And then you had all the football stuff with Art Briles, who, my God.
Baylor might be the most scandalous university in the country.
It might be. It might be. Yeah, there's a lot going on. I've not been to Waco. And I always get the heebie-jeebies when I think of it because of the Koresh stuff. So I have no... It's not anything I'm going to go ever vacation to. I promise you. I'm never going to find myself in Waco, Texas. I promise you that. I do think from the CFP point of view... This isn't a big thing in any way, but it's very embarrassing.
Oh, it's very embarrassing. A lot of egg on the face.
Yeah. And it was really, I think, embarrassing of ESPN to not question him, because these allegations were out there on Monday and they did multiple minutes with him asking questions and did at no point say, Mr. Rhodes, you're under investigation at your own university. How can you possibly still chair this committee? Even the fact that question wasn't asked is a little bit shameful.
Even a care to comment. I mean, sure. Just kind of like the open-ended thing. Like, do you want to comment on these things? Because, yeah, I would say, and again, ESPN, I know, is in bed with the CFP and the committee, and I know they try to be in as lockstep as possible now. But yeah, the idea that he was on there and they just didn't, like, I don't care about Miami. I care about this. I don't care about where you think the ACC is. I care about what the heck's going on with you, your athletic department, the school, and how that would probably affect your job to do this job.
Yeah, and I think just that's the last part that's most important, is how can you possibly do this when you're putting out that? And
you
that's
can't
why
do that job well.
Down.
The hell are you doing this job for?
I don't know either. This has always been my beef with the College Football Playoff Committee. My big beef, I've stated, in terms of athletic directors. And it's nothing personal against any of those guys. It's just they're too busy doing their job. They just are. And so then you say, well, okay, get retired coaches. Well, they have inherent bias that is impossible to get over. So many of them just trust what they're told by their buddies who are still coaching. And they have bias versus teams here and there that they've worked with or programs. Like, that's why, in reality, the best setup to determine something like this is probably the old BCS, where you have a combination of AP coaches polls. All right. So now people who cover it, people who coach it, strength of schedule components, algorithms in terms of who you're playing, quality wins, quality losses, all of it. And then it just spits out the numbers. And it might not even be that different than the actual College Football Playoff Committee spits out. But at least then it's not dudes in a room who can't really watch ball. Because that's the reality of it. There's no way that anybody who's a sitting athletic director at any institution, you take the athletic director at an FBS school, you take the AD at Ohio, he's got work to do on Sunday. It's his busiest day of the year, of the week, is Saturday. It's his busiest day of the year, of the week. And you're telling me that you're also keeping your eye on every other game that's happening? No chance. No chance. So I think they've got to get to an odd number, and obviously they'll find a new chair in pretty short order. Do you guys have a list, by the way, of who's on that committee now?
I know Mark D'Antonio is part of it.
He could handle it.
Yeah, I know D'Antonio was on there.
Well, this kind of gives them the opportunity,
right? Here you go. I got it. Chris Ault, former Nevada quarterback and head coach. Troy Dannon, Nebraska athletic director. Mark D'Antonio, former head coach, of course, goes without saying. Jeff Long, former AD at Pitt, Arkansas and Kansas. So I like former. That's nice. Ivan Mizell, okay, former journalist. Chris Massaro, director of athletics at Middle Tennessee. Mac Rhodes, no more. Mike Riley, former head coach at Oregon State, Nebraska. David Saylor, athletic director at Miami. Wesley Walls, former tight end and Ole Miss player. Carla Williams, director of athletics at Virginia. And Hunter Yurachek, director of athletics at Arkansas. That's the group that's determining who's in, who's out. That's a who's who.
I do like, though, as you mentioned, some former football guys. Coaches, yeah. Players, all of that, and maybe they can dedicate, hey, you just watch the games.
Yeah. 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 I think that's, I like anything that's former. I don't want you having a current job and then also trying to do that. So that's your breaking news of the day. We had mentioned that the Super Bowl champs have a little bit of discomfort within their locker room. If they're not happy, who could be? We'll get to that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends, right here.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
After putting up with Dom Tabari for a decade, the broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
The Philadelphia Eagles have been one of the standard bearers in the National Football League over the last decade, starting with the Foles Championship, which ended a long drought of where they were very, very good, but never able to finally win the whole thing. They run Philly, and they do, and they win that Super Bowl, and then they played for another one and then won it last year. They have one of the best records in the NFL this year, and yet it doesn't quite seem right. Nick Sirianni had an odd press conference yesterday in Philly, and this all stems from kind of the dysfunction that appears to be happening behind the scenes there. And at the center of it has been A.J. Brown. He was available, I think, I want to say this was Sunday after the game, and was asked, it could have been Tuesday too, if everything was okay. This was the conversation from A.J. Brown. Let's have a listen.
So we don't have his comments from after the game, but
this is Tuesday.
Well, Reese? We do have what's reported to be AJ Brown on a live stream.
Okay.
When asked, he was playing Madden, and a streamer just asked him about situation with Philadelphia.
Hey, but look, everything be good though. Like, you know what I'm saying? Everything be straight. You know what I'm saying? Mental good, kids good. You know what I'm saying? Wife good, everything.
Yep. Trimmer.
I mean, yeah, where have you been?
Hey, family good? Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything else? No.
Man, everything gonna click, bro. Chat, chill, look. Everything gonna click, bro. Trust me.
How you been? Yeah, struggling, brother. Hey, if you got me on fantasy, man, get rid of me.
So that last part's pretty damning. If you got me on fantasy, get rid of me. And then he was asked on Wednesday about it. Quote, it's not just totally about my situation. I want to win, too. If we're really focused on winning and doing our job, we can't just keep slapping a Band-Aid over the defense, doing their job and getting us out of trouble. At what point are we going to pick up our slack as an offense? End quote.
They're 7-2. The Philadelphia Eagles are. A.J. Brown has 31 catches for 408 yards, 13.2 per reception is the average on that. So his pace is not what he is used to. Jalen Hurts is completing 69% of his passes for 1860, which is a little low, but the average yards per attempt it's not terrible. It's 7.7 yards a game is 206.7. That's one of the lower ones. His touchdown to interception is 16-1. Touchdown to interception. Offensively, they are not what they were a year ago. This year, Saquon Barkley averaging under 4 yards a carry, 579 yards. They are not as explosive as they have been. But isn't the objective to win first and foremost? And you just won a Super Bowl with this operation. You're probably on a short list of favorites to win it again. If you can't be happy in Philly, even if your statistics are a little bit down, and by the way, he's been compensated. So it's not like he's looking for a new contract. He's been compensated. How does this happen?
It was always very weird that the Tennessee Titans traded him.
Well, that's the big reason Mike Vrabel is no longer there.
Really,
because
nothing.
He did not green light that.
No, he didn't. At all. But I wonder if maybe the front office there saw something with him that they just didn't like and didn't want to commit to. I don't know. I can't remember who it was. Somebody said that maybe this is his way to try to reunite with Vrabel, that he really liked playing for Vrabel, and maybe he wants to try to get back to there. This is a player to me. He's been very productive, been a great wide receiver. This is a player to me I would want to stay away from now, because obviously he doesn't care about winning, because they are winning. They just won the Super Bowl. So obviously he's playing for other reasons. Other things are going to make him happy, whether that be playing for a coach he wants to or his own personal numbers. So this is a guy I would stay away from now on, personally.
Let me ask you guys this. And I have no, this is just us doing sports talk radio on a Thursday. Do you get any Russell Wilson vibes with Jalen Hurts?
I don't. I mean, I think there's probably a Russ before the interception in the Super Bowl and then a Russ after. It feels like that was like the inflection point with him.
I don't know. He had a great couple of great statistical years after the Legion of Boom went away.
Yeah. I guess I just mean of an oddball.
I just wonder if Jalen's a little different. I mean, and it's all the tush-push stuff, all of that. I just wonder where this is. Because they were dealing with this last year. I mean, remember that? When Cleveland went over there to play, it was like, are they going to fire Sirianni? And then he won the Super Bowl. And like statistically, no, he's not Ja'Marr Chase, but it's not like he's got 200 yards receiving. Like he's still being targeted a fair amount and they're winning most especially. So I just wonder if there is a personality thing there that, and I've, this is just 30,000 feet. I just wonder if there's a personality thing there that isn't meshing.
I mean, wasn't AJ Brown the one reading the book on the sideline?
He's John Moxon?
No, remember last year, like you read it, some guy's Moxon. Book on Amazon.
Let me ask you this. Why was Lance Harbor done after that injury? Like, why couldn't he have rehabilitated?
It was a different time back then, Bo. Medicine hadn't gone quite as good, and they'd been masking that injury for so long, there was a lot of damage in there.
Scar tissue?
Yeah, like, I mean,
I thought maybe, that was with the running back.
Maybe if, no, don't you remember the doctor? When they were in the hallway after Lance's surgery, he's like, I'm surprised that he hadn't complained about this earlier, because there was a lot of issue in there, a lot of damage.
The cortisone shots.
Yeah, and
it led to a catastrophic failure of the knee.
That's when the coach looked at Mox. I said, never said anything to me. He looked at Mox and told him, you better run on home. They appreciate you being here, but nothing you can do.
So I don't remember this in the movie. He tried to make a comeback, but a second devastating injury to his opposite knee prevents him from ever playing football again. I'm reading this on.
I don't remember that.
Was there a Varsity Blues 2 that I missed?
I mean, that sounds like there would have been a Varsity Blues prequel.
They'll probably do a remake sometime.
Well, I mean, she could still pull off the whipped cream bikini.
Well, we know that because you watched Landman, which is coming out, I think, next week or this weekend, maybe Landman drops. Yeah. Lance Harbor was going to Florida State. His ride to Florida State was the idea there. I'll tell you this about Philly, though. If there is something that is off there, and the fact that they won a Super Bowl despite it tells you how good that organization is run at the very top. Mm-hmm. Ownership, Howie Roseman, they all row in the same direction. There is a culture there that even when it's off, and something is off, because this is 2 years in a row of this, where despite the ultimate success, we're still not all the way satisfied. And there's got to be, I just feel like there must be something with Hurts. And I'm not being critical of him. His playing style is unique. I mean, 200 yards passing a game is pretty low in the National Football League. And the tush-push stuff is a very, very big part of it. But there's something a little off there that would lead to 2 years in a row being this type of discord between a couple of players on the team, despite winning. Because most guys, AJ has put up massive statistical years, he has gotten paid, and they won a Super Bowl. So to me, this strikes as personal, a little bit personal in that locker room. So Sirianni managed it last year, and they won a Super Bowl, and they're on a short list of teams. Like, if I give you the NFC, and if you were to give me Philly, Detroit, Seattle, and the Rams, and you take the field, yeah, I'm in.
I wonder what A.J. Brown, if you got him one-on-one, honestly, and asked him, like, would you rather play in Philly, maybe not get as many numbers, but win? Or would you rather go to Dallas and have Dak throw it to you all day and never sniff the Super Bowl?
That's why I don't think it's – I think it's – Mike Vrabel loved him. So I think there's more at play here. I think there must be. I don't know if it'll ever come out, but I just wonder that there must be more at play in that building. We'll hit three things on a Thursday up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
The Daily Ryan Day Show is brought to you locally by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers and by Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse on the Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
It's the Daily Show with Coach Ryan Day, brought to you by Safe Flat Auto Glass. We saw Lincoln Kienholz in his package get in the end zone during the course of the Purdue game. I know you've put him out there in some of those other situations. Is his size something that kind of brings a plus to him when those situations run?
Well, yeah, Lincoln's a really good athlete. He's a multiple sport athlete, but he does have size and strength, and so he's getting more and more comfortable. You can see him. He hit that one the other day with a lot of confidence, and the good news is he's a quarterback. You know, he's not just a running back. So as time goes on, you know, if he continues to do it like that, you know, we'll continue to add his package because it's a weapon for us because it equates numbers, as you could see. You know, once we added him in there, but you know, once he goes in, you know, they start to play tendencies, and so that's the whole game within the game. But just another example of somebody who got in the game and did his job. And so another thing for you know, defenses to prepare for.
Okay, we'll have another comment in just a moment. Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safe Flight Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at SafeLight.com. Safe Flight Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
SafeLight Repair, SafeLight Replace.
Buckeye fans, choose chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged for a smoother finish. It's got that crisp, refreshing taste that makes those moments when you choose to rise above the noise and choose chill even better. Coors Light is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics, so crack one open and take a sip. Coors Light, choose chill. Celebrate responsibly. 2025 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Beer.
I know you'd much rather have touchdowns rather than field goals, but it had to be great to be able to lean on Jaden Fielding, especially plus 40 and two field goal tries to be able to knock those through.
Yeah, that was good. And the two-minute drill was important, something we hadn't done so far this year really very well. Got it going. I thought the guys had a great understanding of what we were trying to get done. Protection was solid. Routes were spaced out well. Julian did a good job. We got out of bounds. We understood the situation. You know, got added to the field goal right there with the quick throw to the sideline. To Jeremiah, and then maybe with a little bit of time left, you can try one more to see, you know, if we can add to the field goal. But I felt like at that moment it was good to see if Jaden can make, you know, a 50-plus yarder, you know. And I thought this is a great example of how, you know, we may need to win a game down the road in a two-minute drill. So, you know, he got a chance and put it through the uprights. And so hopefully that'll add to his confidence and know that he can do it. And now it's just a matter of doing it consistently and focusing. And I know the team has confidence in him.
Okay, this is the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
For over 37 years, Buckeye Nation has known Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse for serving the best steaks in the city. Our thick-cut, aged steaks are a staple in Columbus with three locations in Upper Arlington, Dublin, and downtown. And just like the Buckeyes, we strive for excellence and an experience like no other. Hyde Park is proud to introduce the newly added wine room at our downtown Columbus location, where a new elegance in dining surrounds you, creating the ideal setting for any occasion or the perfect night out. Hyde Park is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics. Go Bucks!
Around here, it's all or nothing. And Toyota has more all-wheel drive choices than anybody, like the family-size Highlander and the bigger, more powerful Grand Highlander. Now through December 1st, get 4.75 APR financing on any remaining new 25 Highlander or Grand Highlander, including hybrid models, with approved credit through TFS. Plus, you get Toyota Care, 2 years no-cost maintenance. For complete details, go to toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
If you love a good pie analogy,
think of the cap as a pie. And once you take out one piece, there's less left for the next guy.
Then this is the radio show for you. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are. Here's what you have to look forward to here the rest of the day here on The Fan. The Ryan Day Show is coming up here at noon in about 13 minutes from now. And then a time change for tonight's Jackets game against Edmonton a half hour later. So you'll have Fan pregame at 7, and then you'll have Jackets and Oil at 7:30. This is not a FanDuel game. We know Jody's not calling it, so this one will be an ESPN Plus game is what you'll have for that. Nice stretch for the Jackets. Oil, Rangers in the 25th anniversary game, and then the Canadiens after that. Were either of you in the building when Calvert and Nash fought?
No, I remember watching it on TV, though.
I was not, but I will never forget where I was when that happened. It was like, whoa, that game was crazy.
Oh, I thought there was more to where you were, like if you were at like a...
Oh, I was just at an establishment down near the arena.
That maybe established.
They're not a sponsor. I don't know. They're not a sponsor. I don't know if we want to mention him. So
it was the most uncomfortable I've ever been at Nationwide. Just
was that whole game right with Nash and Bob going on?
Nash and Bob screwing around, and then Calvert fighting him, and it was like, wait, we're rooting for Rick Nash to get beat up. Like, what are we doing? Like, this was just, it was crazy. And Rick was so gracious afterwards. I talked to the Rangers media guy, and I went in the room, and Rick gave me a couple of minutes, and he was so gracious about answering questions about it because he hated it. He hated everything about that return. All right, what do we have in the poll today, Reese?
Daily Fan Poll asks, who do you think is more likely to still be the head coach of their respective NFL team next season? Your options are Kevin Stefanski and Zach Taylor. 77% say Zach Taylor will remain head coach of the Bengals. Yes.
Okay. All right, time for three things on a Thursday. Hit it, guys.
One, two, three
things.
Sponsored by Buckeye Lake Marina, Central Ohio's largest selection of new and pre-owned boats. Find your next dream boat at BuckeyeLakeMarina.com.
All right, number one for me, last night, the fourth grade basketball team, Bootsy's team, I had a little bit of a Norman Dale practice for them. And one of the things that we were working on is toughness. So we do this thing like it's like 3-on-3-on-3. So if you score, you stay in, and then you go from one end to the other, and other teams play defense, and you get a turnover, you go in the other direction. And they were all just complaining and whining because there were no, I'm getting fouled. And so afterwards, I said, you'll notice that I didn't call a lot of fouls while you guys were doing the 3-on-3-on-3. And I said, first of all, I'm really proud of you guys for taking care of each other. Nobody did anything cheap, like, but you guys were physical, and what we're trying to teach is physicality. And as I'm having this very heartfelt conversation with them about why the practice was the way that it was and why the things were done the way that they did, one of them farted the most disgusting burn your nostril hair fart that I can recall. Now, this happens a lot in their age. Like, this will happen. But this one damn near made me throw up to the point where I said, that's just awful. Let's just move this down 20 feet. It was that bad. You could taste it. And of course, they're all pointing fingers. He did it.
Onion and ketchup.
Oh, exactly. God, awful.
It's one of those things I guess you never think about until you're in it. Fart timeouts.
Jeez. They do it all the time after practice. You get one so often in those post-practice. I don't know if it's just, I guess it's just a release. And this one was god-awful.
Speaking of releases, I was a little premature yesterday in calling the Bobcats dead in the Mid-American Conference. So right now, there are, I think, 5 teams that are 4-2. Western Michigan's 5-1. So the Bobcats not dead yet for a repeat MAC championship berth. Sorry about that, Coach Smith.
First thing for me, sad news this morning, hearing that Larry Brooks, he had covered the New York Rangers for the New York Post for a long time, over 40 years, passed away at the age of 75. You may be like, well, what do we care about that? Well, he had some of the greatest interactions with John Tortorella ever, like ever. This one.
Should one of your guys have taken a third man in?
I'm not going to answer any questions from you.
You're not?
No.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'll speculate.
You speculate and be as sarcastic as you can be, as you usually are.
I will.
Go right ahead.
Good. Should one of you guys have taken a third man out?
I said I'm not taking your answering any of your questions. No. Have you ever fought before?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah. Why? Are you challenging me now?
No, I'm not challenging you.
Okay.
You know, Redden sticks up for his teammates the other night.
Yeah.
And you come out with some sarcastic article.
It was funny.
It was funny?
Yeah. Well, you know what?
You were probably beat up in the bus stop most of the time.
I think so, huh?
Many of them you couldn't air because they were expletive-filled, but Larry Brooks, gone too soon.
Are you challenging me?
It was so amazing. That's old school media. And I think Torts probably really liked him, too. I mean, I think
probably
that's
loved
just,
him.
That's just part of it, right? Like, there's just part of that give and take that's incredible. I'm glad you had one of those. I neglected to mention that in the show, and I wanted to. Number two for me, so Buddy Garrity's got a new move. We, in the basement where he spends the majority of his time, we have garbage that's in, like, it's in a drawer, so it, like, pulls out. And I went down there this morning, and wouldn't you know it, he had found a way without the use of opposable thumbs to nose open the drawer and eat trash out of it. I just, what are we doing, bud? And then I just looked at him in the face and I just said, I can't even get mad at you because somehow you were able to get your nose to be that functional. I assume that's how he did it. God bless him.
Second thing for me, speaking of dogs, Stephen Vogt, dog confirmed. I haven't had the chance on the air to congratulate him for a second consecutive AL Manager of the Year title. This one more impressive than last season's, considering the FBI took two players off of your team. One of them, one of the best relievers in the last 20 years. So Stephen Vogt, hopefully he's having a cold one today. And I know they're like going to save $10 million by having those two players off the books. It won't go to you or your team.
No.
Second thing for me, we'll do three things to a Buckeye victory for tomorrow. So tomorrow, excited to be back at Alumni Stadium, calling to sales for the second week. Big time state matchup. Can't believe these two have never hooked up before. Maslin versus DeSales, first time ever.
They've never played?
Never played. First meeting.
Wow. That's very, very cool. Finally, number three for me. I was looking at next week's college football slate, and I was thinking, I wonder where College Game Day is going to go when we were talking about Ohio State being Big Dune. They should go to Missoula, Montana. They've gone to Bozeman for Cat Grizz. They should go to Missoula for Cat Grizz. They're ranked second and third in 1AA. And Missoula, it pains me to say this, Missoula's environment is better. They should go there.
Final thing for me, you got the 2025 Joe Moore Award semifinalists out yesterday. Cincinnati, Duke, Georgia Tech, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, Oregon, Texas A&M, Utah, and Vanderbilt. I'm going to pose this question to you. You don't have to answer right now, but is Ohio State a snub by not being included there?
I would think so. That music means the Ryan Day Show is coming up next. Rothman and Ice after. Big show for them. Hockey and Hounds with Damon Severson at 1:15. Earl Campbell on a Gold Jacket Thursday at 2:30.
Wow. Good get, Cole.
That's awesome. That's very, very cool. We're back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends, we're here on The Fan.
One, two, three. Here in The Fan is always football o'clock. Proud to be your home of the Buckeyes, Browns, and all the NFL games you can handle. The Fan.
Hey, what's up?
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while. Call 1-800.